Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. It is 107 live from our Skyline studios on Wacker Drive. It's Roger Badish in the newsroom. Ben filling in for Jess tonight. What's going on? Oh, Jess is not here tonight, Roger.
Oh, my. Oh, no. She has an event.
She's at a wedding in Iowa.
Iowa. Yeah. Not the Field of Dreams.
She's in Des Moines.
Oh, okay.
Where I have a lot of friends. I wish I would have known she was going to Des Moines.
Yeah.
I could have introduced her to some people.
Is that the Quad Cities?
No. Quad Cities is like Moline,
Dubuque,
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Des Moines is a little further in. Des Moines is about a five-hour drive.
Yeah.
From here, maybe closer to six.
I don't know why I was... It just slipped my mind. Don't worry about me.
That's okay. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
We have... my treat is on the way.
You ordered pizza.
Yes, I did, because... I did very well at the bowling alley and at golf.
So wait, you bowl for money? I thought that's just like at the end of the year thing.
You get money at the end of the year. So the money that you pay every night, the fees, the bowling fee.
Oh, you guys pay every week?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, first we all have to pay for our sponsorship. So each team is sponsored.
Okay.
So there's a fee for that, one-time fee.
Okay.
Then each week we pay in... for bowling, everyone's the same cost for everyone every week.
Okay,
that goes part of that goes to pay the bowling establishment.
Okay,
and part of it goes towards end of the year prize money.
Okay,
you know, first place team, second place team, that kind of stuff. And then there are wagers, one might call them.
Okay.
For the night.
Little side bets?
Well, no, because this would be for everyone.
Okay.
If you want to enter. You don't have to.
Okay.
But if you want to, you can enter for high handicap game.
Okay.
So you bowl a good game, you add your handicap. If you have the highest score, you get money for that game.
Okay.
There's handicap pairs. You can pair up with someone else bowling on another team, and if you combined have the highest score and handicap for the second game, then you can win money there. There's a mystery pot where you pay a buck every week, and they pull two numbers. If your score from the first or second game is the first number, you win. If no one claims that, they call the second number. If no one claims that, it rolls over for the next week.
Okay.
So that can build up. Then there's the strike pot. You can get into that. You pay your money. You
is
get
like a certain frame or?
Well, it's they do tickets.
Okay.
So, and this is again is for the whole house. You buy a set of tickets, and then after like the second game, they'll call the number. So somebody reaches in, they pull out a number. If you have it, you get to bowl for the prize money if you get a strike.
Okay.
If you don't, rolls over. Then there's those side bets, the individual bets within a team. Now, most teams don't do bets within the team. They will charge you for not bowling well.
Your team will?
Yeah.
There's like a fine?
There's a fine.
Almost like a curse jar, but it's for bad bowling.
Yeah, exactly. So okay. you get marks. If you don't pick up a single pin... You get a mark. You don't hit the head pin on the first ball, you get a mark.
Okay.
If you get a double, everybody else gets a mark. So it works all ways. Then all that money is collected, and that's paid out within the team at the end of the year.
How much does a mark cost?
It depends on the team. Some it's a nickel, some it's a dime, some it's a quarter, whatever.
What is it on your team?
My last team, it was a dime per point.
Okay.
And you can end up, you know, spending $3 for the night.
So it's not too bad.
No. Ours now, for this team I'm on now, it's cards. So if you get a mark, you get a card, like out of a regular deck of 52. You pay a buck in for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you get a three-bagger, turkey, you get two cards. And so... You can only have seven cards in a hand. At the end of the game, whoever's got the highest hand wins the money. Then we do it again each game.
So it's a busy night. You're not just sitting there throwing a ball once in a while.
No,
it's
very busy. Not only that, especially when you're bowling the good teams, and I'm on a really good team this year.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone's bowling strikes, you don't have time to sit and rest.
Yeah,
and
that's
rest,
true.
You know, there's five on a team. We bowl three games. And there's a Monday night league. I haven't started on that. I haven't, because I'm bowling as a sub.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the second sub.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird. But that is four games, three on a team.
Oof.
You don't have time to rest.
Four games is a lot of bowling in one night, isn't it?
I know.
Is your arm pretty sore?
Well, but you
by
go faster.
You, I know, but you're throwing the ball a lot.
Right. And yeah, your arm can get tired.
That's up to, you know, up to 80 or more times you're going to throw that ball in the night. I imagine you're pretty sore by the end.
Probably. I know after three games, my arm's just kind of
whenever
to fall
we bowl,
off.
We go two games, and I'm good with that. Generally.
Well, but you're not bowling league or anything.
Well, no,
you know, you're out for a little
Six
recreation.
Years. Yeah,
yeah,
but still, that's a lot of bowling.
So I did pretty good. I 190 on the first game.
That's nice.
222
Ooh.
Second game. That's when I won all the money.
Yeah,
and I got tired on the second game. 164
On the third game?
Third game, yes.
Yeah.
Third game.
Yeah, that's what happens. That's why I don't bowl a third game anymore.
Yeah, see,
that's you go downhill, and you were all happy, and then your day's ruined.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I got kind of, you know, they kept calling my name for the money and everything. I'm like, first of all, I rarely win.
Yeah.
And so when they call my name, everybody looked, oh, hey, Roger won something.
Yeah.
Look at that. So
222 Man,
yeah. Well, I had a good week last week, too, except for the middle game. My first and third games were great. But the third game was horrible.
What's your highest score ever?
I think a 253.
Man, that's a nice game.
That was about, that might have been about 6 years ago.
Oh, that's not that long ago.
Yeah, and I've come close. 240s maybe sometimes,
that's
a couple
a nice
of times.
Night.
Yeah.
That's a nice night.
And I usually am my own worst enemy.
As we all are.
Yeah.
Yeah. From time to time.
From time to time, yeah.
Excellent.
So
well,
how did you do this?
So we had a rough week, as
yeah.
you know. Thank you, Roger. We lost my brother this week. My brother, who would call into the show every now and then.
That's right.
My brother, Mike, he was only 55. He's going to turn 56 in November. He had epilepsy his whole life, and he'd been battling his whole life, medical conditions, and had been on medication his whole life. And, you know, in the last couple of years, he'd gone up and down with his health, had been in the hospital a little bit. Thought we had it under control and he was doing okay, but he went on Labor Day, and he went in his sleep, which is a blessing and a beautiful thing. I think a lot of us would say that's the way to go if we can go that way. But it's sad because he was only 55, and so it was tough. But I got a lot of great memories of Mike, and so I'm going to share a little bit of those tonight. If you'll indulge me a little bit, and. You know, whenever somebody passes, and we see it especially in social media these days, because that's how we keep in touch with so many people that we're not really close with. And they always say, you know, hug your loved ones or remember this or do this. And it's, I think, I don't know, we don't generally do it. But I don't have regrets about Mike. I mean, I wish I had talked to him more recently and hung out with him a little more and things like that. But you never know when suddenly these things are going to happen. So It's a tough lesson to learn, I guess.
Well, we all have best intentions, I think.
We have a lot of best intentions in life, and it's tough. It is tough, because you say live every day like it's last, but it's impossible to live every day like it's the last, right? Life is too hard to do that with, because you got too much to muddle through in life to always be living it on the edge of, this could be the last day, and I'll not regret it. But I want to tell a couple of funny stories about my brother, Mike, who played some funny tricks on us this week from the beyond, which is so like my brother. So we'll share a couple of those. We got a lot of fun stuff to do on the show tonight. After two, as I mentioned to John before we got in here, some friends who run a bunch of suburban restaurants are going to be. We'll talk a little bit about the restaurant biz, maybe get some tips about stuff to do this fall and drinks to make at home and things like that, if they can share some of that stuff. And after three, I don't remember, know if you remember this, Raj, but about, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 6 months ago, we had on these guys, one of them is my cousin, and these other guys, the paranormal
guys. I remember
guys.
That, yeah.
They're doing another event.
Oh, really?
So a bunch of them are going to come in, and I'm going to, what's freaking me out, though, is like, I'm not going to mess with them. My brother's gone. I'm not going to try to get them. I don't want, like, some weird visitation thing from my brother tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to get into that, but we'll talk about.
Are you going to turn the lights on in there when they come in?
No.
Well, I don't want to have to, like, see shadows moving behind you again.
Well, don't scare me again.
All right, I won't do that. I won't do that.
If you see something, just let it get me. Just let it get me.
No.
And then, you know, at my funeral, you could be like, I could have saved him, but he said, if it ever happens, don't scare him again. He'd rather just get attacked by the vicious monster that's lurking in the studio.
Right.
So,
okay.
We'll be fine. Okay. We'll get
through.
We'll get through. As long as there's pizza.
Oh, there will be pizza.
And thank you, Roger, for
that. You're very welcome.
We appreciate that. All right, 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, Ben is manning the phone lines. You can also text us at that same number, 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. Everybody, Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up really late with us. Hope we're not putting you to sleep, but if that's what you need, then by gosh, I hope we can do that for you as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You're welcome to jump in at any time. As I was mentioning, my brother Mike Bubala, was 55 years old, and he passed away earlier this week, and we had his funeral today and his visitation. And my brother, for all the problems he had in life, he had medical conditions his whole life, and it was a struggle for him because he couldn't play contact sports growing up, and he had seizures, he was on medication his whole life, and one thing he inherited from my father was his obstinance, and so he at times thought he could go off the medication, then that would get him in trouble and be back on medication, things like that, but he was doing relatively well, I thought, health-wise, but he passed away in his sleep earlier this week, and so we've been remembering him all this week and going through it, my sister and I and my brother-in-law going through his stuff. He saved a lot of stuff. My brother was a diehard Cubs fan. Now, a lot of people are diehard Cubs fans, right? My brother actually belonged to the diehard Cubs fan club that I'm guessing is not a big deal anymore, although I don't know, but like in the 80s and stuff, like he had a framed letter of authenticity that he was a member of the diehard Cub fan club. He had probably 30 or 40 old issues of Vineline magazine that he still had. I mean, he was just the ultimate Cubs fan. And he was lucky enough that his best friend growing up, Kevin Welch, was a good buddy of his who I got to see today. He took Mike to the World Series in 2016. My brother got to see the Cubs win the World Series, which I'm very happy that he did not pass before he got to see that. So that was good. And today we had our memorial. And it was funny because, you know, my brother did. He pulled practical jokes all the time. He loved pulling practical jokes. He loved to laugh. He had an infectious, one of his best friend Kevin wrote on Facebook, I think, almost embarrassing laugh. My brother, like me, my kids get very embarrassed of my laugh. If we're out in public and I start laughing hard, Tommy gets so upset with me and like wants to walk out. He's so mortified of when I really get going and start laughing. I have a couple laughs. One is just high pitch. One is a hyena like thing I do. But when I get going, I laugh. And my brother was the same way, that he would just start laughing out loud. And, you know, my mom and sister were telling stories this week, remembering that. And this is, so I'm like close to 8 years younger than Mike. So there were a lot of stories that I wasn't really around for. I was too little to really remember, but my brother would get into giggle fits, like at the dinner table. You know, something happened, he starts giggling, and he won't stop until my mother says, go in the other room, and you come back when you can sit at the table. And so Mike would go in the other room, and Angie would say how she would hear him, like, trying to stop laughing, you know, trying to, you know, straighten it out. And he'd finally come back in and try to be looking down, and he'd sit down at the table, and then he'd look at Angie, and he'd start giggling again, and like, get out of here, you know, screaming. I remember one time, we went on like one real family vacation when I was growing up. When I was in sixth grade, we flew to Florida. My dad's boss had a condo down there. We're going to go stay in his condo. And I remember one night, Mike and I are staying together in some room in the condo. And I don't know what's going on. Him and I, it's in the middle of the night, and we're laughing. We're telling jokes or doing something, and we're up and we're laughing. And my mom's getting so mad at us that we're not asleep. And she, I remember her coming into the room, and she's yelling at us to go to sleep. And my brother keeps laughing, and now he can't control himself. He's giggling. And she comes right up next to him, and she's yelling at him. And he's laughing harder and harder. And he pulls the sheets over his head, and she's slapping him on top of the sheets, like just beating him in a loving motherly way.
Yeah, that's going to get him to stop laughing.
And he's just laughing all the harder as she's hitting him. Oh, God. And looking at some of the pictures today, I didn't get a chance. So Angie and I spoke before, so we had a Catholic Mass, And they won't, it depends, diocese. They wouldn't let us give a eulogy during the Mass. They said you can speak before Mass starts, but not after. So Angie and I each got up and told a little bit about Mike, but Angie put together this memorial board. We have all these great old pictures of Mike as a baby and as an adult and everything in between with his kids and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the centerpiece picture is Mike and Angie from one of the years, because they are only 2 years apart, so they were in high school at the same time. Uh-huh. So it was a prom picture. And I guess before they headed off to prom, they took a picture together at the house.
Okay.
But it's the centerpiece picture she put in. It looks like they went to prom together. I'm looking at this, and I said something to my brother-in-law. He's like, I told her not to put that picture there. And I wanted so bad to say, and I didn't, and it's probably for the best. I wanted to go up there and go, thank you so much all for being here today. If you got a chance to view the memorial board, please know, we grew up in Northwest Indiana, not the far south. They didn't actually go to prom together. That was just a picture they took, but I didn't. I didn't get it.
You didn't go there.
Okay. No, I didn't, but only because I forgot, not because I have the sense not to. me and Colleen and the kids, were the first ones at the church today, which mm-hmm. cracked us up because we're late for everything. I mean, my sister will lie to me about what time things start.
Just
in
to
general,
make
just
you
to
late?
Just to make sure, no, to try to get me there on time.
Oh, okay.
You know, she'll say something starts at noon if it starts at 12:30.
Gotcha.
Knowing there's a good chance that maybe I'll be closer to being on time, things like that. So we get there this morning, because we're driving from where we lived out to Northwest Indiana, you never know, with traffic and whatever.
Yeah, it's a long way.
So we're trying to leave 2 hours early just to be safe, and we leave a half hour later than we wanted to.
Oh, no.
So then we're thinking we're going to push it. Well, we end up getting there half an hour early, and in fact, nobody's even at the church yet. So we're all wow, look at us, you know, mm-hmm. Mike's helping us out today, things like that. And then we start thinking, wait a minute, are we starting at the funeral?
Oh, no.
I started worrying about it. But no, we were good. We were just the first ones there. It was very impressive. So my family, my parents got divorced, I think it's 15 years ago now, maybe even a little longer. I remember we had just moved into our house, and it was a cantankerous situation. It was not good. My dad, you know, remarried, moved away, all these things. And it was just very stressful on the family. Let's mm-hmm. say. My dad and mom, I think, have seen each other once in those last 15 years, and they do not speak. And, you know, it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, well, this is going to be very interesting today to see how this goes. Cause my dad was coming up, he was bringing his wife, and, you know, my mom and dad haven't gotten along, and my mom's sister, and my dad never got along.
Oh.
I don't remember them ever. And I remember some heavyweight battles back in the day. And so when my dad comes in, my friends were like, you know, you could feel the tension with a knife. What's going to, you know, I think some people might have shown up just to see what was going to happen. It was kind of one of those,
right.
You know, you want to be there because Ben and Nance will both be in the same place. And who knows what the hell's going to happen.
Oh, boy.
And so when my dad walks in and comes up to my mom and they give each other a hug and they mm-hmm. talk. And I was just like, wow. And then the piece de resistance was mm-hmm. my aunt's there. And my dad comes up to my aunt. And I'm thinking, oh, God. And they talk for a minute. And then they started laughing together. And I thought, wow, now Mike is really working some stuff from the great beyond here. Because I never in my life would have ever believed I would see something like that. I was very proud and impressed. And so many people showed up that you know, family members and old friends that I never would have expected. Friends of mine that came from college and from work and everything that I was very surprised and very touched. And old family members who we just haven't seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike worked for a long time at the Northwest Indiana Times. And they sent flowers. He hadn't worked there in 4 or 5 years. And they sent flowers and some people from there came. I mean, it was just really, really touching and really sweet. And it was a nice day. It's nice to get to remember all the good times, you mm-hmm. know, and that's all I remember from Mike is he had a lot of issues health-wise and work-wise. And as I said in my little eulogy, my brother did not follow the path that everybody else said you should do. You should do this. You should go back to school. You should blah, blah, blah. And he never wanted to hear any of it. And it was much to the chagrin of his family members who were mm-hmm. worried about him, wanted him to do this or that. But he had his own path. And even until the very end, he believed that the best days were ahead. He was into very into now, like day trading. He wanted to day trade, and he was always calling me or other people about these CBD stocks. Very into the CBD stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we found so much research he had on stocks and things like that in his stuff. And, you know, he's not at pain now, so I'm happy for that. But I miss my brother. I'm sad I won't get to hear his laugh anymore and have him call in on the show and have nothing to say. We just call in to check in and ramble on about things. I used to give him a hard time about that. I'm sad we won't get to have that anymore, but it was, and he's divorced, and that was, not good either. It wasn't like, you know, a real amicable right. divorce. And everybody from that side came up, and his in-laws came, and it was just really sweet. So it was a nice day. So thank you all for those who reached out on Facebook. I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's hard, but we've got to remember the good times. And you know, what I told everybody today was, if we take anything away today, let's take an optimism that things can be better. Mm-hmm. No matter where you're at in life, and I do believe this, I often believe that happiness is our own creation. You know, we could be unhappy, or we can find happiness and find the good in whatever we've got in life, and we've got to do a better job of doing that. So that's my little speech.
I'm Words done. To live by.
Thank you so much, everybody, for putting up with me. BA in Wisconsin wants to talk about pizza. We'll do that after we check the news. Bala Show on 720 WGN, 1:34 in the morning. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Raj, I didn't pay attention during the sports segment. What did the Cubbies do last night?
Cubbies lost 7-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Did you watch the Bears game at all?
On and off. It was on at the bowling alley.
God, thank God.
And it was horrible.
That was the worst.
Yeah.
Worst game. Oh, God, was that bad. You know, last year, I don't know if you remember, I took my older son Jack and my son Michael and my buddy Jim, we went up to Lambeau. Cubs mm-hmm. open.
Or I remember that.
Yeah. Bears open in Lambeau last year. Bears like had this 20-point lead in the first half. It was the most amazing night. And then Rodgers went, got carted off, was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Then he comes limping back onto the field and they win.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, what was worse? And honestly, this was worse because last year we didn't expect that they'd come up to Lambeau and beat the heck out of him. So when right. Rodgers let him back, yeah, that can happen. But this was just atrocious.
Yeah.
Oh,
there was nothing good to take away from it. Yeah, on either side of the ball.
No, I disagree. The defense was great. The defense was great, except for one drive. Except for one drive with two big plays, they were great all night. I mean, Rodgers had one of the worst games of his career.
But he looked better bad than
That's on our offense. Our defense, I thought, was really good. The defense did everything they needed to do for us to win a ball game. Our offense was atrocious. Just atrocious. I feel so bad because I thought Mitch is really going to progress the second, you know, third year. He's going to really get it going and all these things are going to be great. And I was just stunned.
I think he's still... I mentioned one of the guys last night, because every play was called into him.
You weren't here last night. You didn't work afterwards. You were just mean at bowling?
Yeah, at bowling. Okay. I said to one of the guys at bowling, but I listened to Hampton OB and Cause on the way home.
You did?
After the game.
We were thinking about turning that on because I remember last year, you know, I honestly worry about Ed Obradovich. I don't know if
he went, oh my God, I thought, again, and this was within the first 3 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
And he started out slow, and I'm going, all right, calm down. He's fine. He's setting up whatever's coming, but you're not ready for what he's setting up. And all of a sudden, he just went nuts. He leaned back from the microphone. He's screaming. He's yelling. He's, oh my God. And I'm listening to this as I'm driving home. And this is how the year is going to be. My take from it was every offensive play, it looked as though all the plays were being called in. To Trubisky, because he's grabbing his helmet, you know, covering up the holes.
Rodgers doing the same thing.
But I think one of the points, you're in a professional level now. I think one of the points that OB and Hamp brought up were that you've got, these are professional players. They've been in the league long enough. They know what they're doing. You got to let them play. You can't have call in the play from the sideline and then they're stuck doing that play.
But that's standard. They do that every game, every play. He's always going to have them called in. Rodgers' plays are called in too. Rodgers has the ability to change the play when he reads the defense.
Exactly. And now I think Trubisky's played enough that he should be allowed to do that.
Well, and he might be. I don't know that he's not. But I don't know that he's at a place where he's comfortable doing it. And I'll tell you, and I don't know football at all, so I apologize for my Monday morning quarterbacking here. But it looks to me like, from a very, not ever really playing the game stance, that he locks in on whatever the play is.
Well, right.
And locks in, because generally with a play, you've got like two or three reads.
Right.
Here's your
you've
one
got
thing.
Options.
If it's not working, you look at these others.
Right.
He seems to lock in on one thing. And like, there were a couple of times last night he threw the ball away so quickly that I was thinking, wow, you're just, if that doesn't look good, you're just getting rid of it. You're not trying to make something happen. He seemed to have, and the offense seemed to have, no creativity last night. He ran the ball only a couple times. He stayed in the pocket a little too long. It seemed like he locked in on certain receivers, like, for too long. He tried to force a couple balls into places they shouldn't have been. It just wasn't the offense that these guys had last year. And I blame, it looks like, Mitch maybe didn't grow enough, but I was surprised at Matt Nagy, because he had such a creative offense last year. They had such creative things that they did.
Right.
I was just really surprised that we didn't get anything, with using Tariq Cohen or this new running back or anything. It just didn't seem very creative.
Was it Cohen? Who's the other running back with Cohen?
There's a new guy they drafted from Iowa State. He had a couple good runs. I can't remember his name.
I don't think Cohen was used at all.
He was used a little bit, but mostly he was used on, he was returning a lot of punts all night long, because our defense made them punt a million times.
Yeah, right.
There was a lot of punts all night. And then, you know what? We're down 7-3.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the 40-yard line, or would have been like a 48-yard kick, and it's 4th and 10, and we went for it.
Yep.
And I thought, come on. You got a new guy. Get him out there to try to get points. If he doesn't make it, he doesn't make it.
Right.
But let's not, I could see if it's 4th and 2, 4th and 3, but on 4th and 10, we're going for it instead of just letting this guy come out there and earn what he's getting paid for.
If you go 4th and 10, if you go 4th and 10 and nothing happens, you're still giving them the ball at the same spot where if he had tried the field goal and he missed it, it'd still be there.
Well, you move back about 7 yards because the field, it's from the point of the field goal. But it's negligible.
Right.
And the idea that our offense, who is not doing anything, is going to suddenly convert a 4th and 10.
Exactly.
Is ridiculous.
No, it's, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm not there on the sidelines. I'm not in the team room, the locker room, or with the coaches going over plays and stuff. So, again, it's the guys last night, on the show, we're putting it all on Nagy.
Yeah, well, I don't blame them. OB did that last year, too, after that Packers game. When we were driving home from Lambeau, we were listening to him. And I was kind of upset with OB, because he's saying John Fox would have done better. I'm like, oh, God, come on, give this guy a chance. It's his first game. All these things, I thought they were really too hard on him. Whatever they said last night, I'll go along with. Because. Okay. I got to say, I was just so stunned at how bad our offense looked.
Yeah.
And were they saying it all? I was wondering if they were ticked off because Trubisky didn't really play in the preseason at all.
They went
of
off
our
on that.
Didn't.
But again, they blamed
like the
Nagy,
well, that is Nagy
for not playing him
and
for not playing the regulars and claiming that, everybody else, I think the example he started to use, or one of them started to use, was, in baseball, let's just go in and throw the ball around a couple of times in spring training and don't hit the ball, we'll start the regular season.
It's different because of the injuries.
Well, I understand.
Because of the threat of the injury, but this is a time where you look at it and say,
but it's professional football, come on, you need to be ready. How can you get ready? I think one of the criticisms for the Bears' practices was that they weren't really sharp.
Yeah.
And that it showed up in preseason, and then it showed up here.
The offense sure wasn't sharp.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But the defense had it going on.
They
Raj, you got to look at that.
All right, first game.
Like two good drives.
First game,
had.
I'll give it to him. I just was not impressed at all
Rodgers
the way around.
Rodgers had his worst quarter since, like, 2000. I don't know. It's 1994. He couldn't have possibly been playing that long ago. I don't know since when. Some crazy long time. His worst quarter ever. He had negative 12 yards in the first quarter, which is insane for him. He's a Hall of Famer. Then in the third quarter, then they score that one touchdown. The second, then the third quarter, he gets 0 yards again. I mean, think about that. They gave up one touchdown, and really they gave up one big play to Rodgers. And he just gunslinged that ball downfield.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, and you know, there are a couple times suddenly the defense would look soft and give up these big plays.
But yeah.
God, they held him to one touchdown. You got to win a game when you're giving up one touchdown.
Yeah, one touchdown, and we got help.
Did you see that was the first time the Packers had beaten the Bears by scoring 10 or less points since like 1932 or something?
Oh, who cares about that?
I care about it.
All right, fine. Calm down now.
You know, and we're joking today that my brother apparently cared about the Cubs. He was watching the Cubs game instead of the Bears on Thursday night because the Cubs won their game.
Right.
But the Bears did not.
Yeah, we had that at the bowling alley, too. They had already turned the Bears games on.
Yeah.
And a bunch of guys walked up because there's something like 12 TV sets there. And a couple of the guys come up and say, hey, can you put the Cubs game back on?
Yeah, at least one of them.
And so, you know, we were bored watching the Bears game later on. And I looked at guys. I go, hey, anyone hear what the Cubs are doing? Because there's the Cubs game's not on the TVs.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, did the old doy. I could have had a V8. Movement and got my phone out, and so I pull up the game, MLB whatever,
right,
and it's the page where it just shows what the score is and what the inning is and then the list of all the players and what they're doing. I go, no, I want to see what the pitch by pitch thing is,
right?
You know, I want to see who's up, I want to know what's going on. Yeah. And well, no, it's you can actually
you can
see that
access.
For nothing.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I had put up the first page, it was 5-4, and so I'm pressing the button pitch by pitch, and I'm waiting. I said, all right, why isn't it going to pitch by pitch? And just as it goes to the pitch by pitch,
Schwarbaum,
he had just hit the home run.
Yeah.
And the next page comes up 9-4 now.
Yeah.
And I'm going, all right, who was that? You know.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, BA has been holding on forever here. BA is up in Wisconsin. Hey, BA, how are you this morning?
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
First of all, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I was going to talk about pizza because
yeah.
Roger was teasing us about a super secret surprise.
Okay.
And I was going to, yeah, but first I want to say God bless you and your family.
Oh, thank you very much.
And I want to also, I admire the way you could so succinctly tell a story at the end of such a rough day.
I appreciate that.
Okay, and obviously I've been on hold for a while, so now you got me going about the Bears. Keep in mind, yeah, no, because I live in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you do. But you're a Bears fan?
Yeah, but I'm a Bears fan, yeah. So, I don't know if you guys heard it last night, but the first thing that everybody cheered about was, yeah, we made a field goal. Forgot about that guy from last year, right?
I know.
Did you hear the cheers?
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody
the
just
you
like,
can tell
what?
it wasn't just excited that we scored. It was, oh, thank God that worked.
Now we got a kicker, right?
Yeah. And then we were afraid to use him the rest of the game.
Well, we got to keep him healthy, sweetheart.
Oh, I'm not worried about him not being healthy. Come on, he's a kicker. He'll be fine.
We don't want him to break an ankle on the first day.
Oh,
stop.
God. We want to win the game, though.
But back to your story. I mean, I'm so glad you guys didn't cut to me right after your story because I was crying.
Oh.
Like, suck it up, BA. No, because it felt like I was way across the Thanksgiving table from Joe. Thank goodness we don't actually have to pick sides unless it's football, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I know, because we have, you know, we have a clan of blended families, and in those tender times, people should just drop that stuff.
Yeah, well, and they did today. I mean, that was the thing that was really impressive. Like, there's
yes,
been a lot of issues, and everybody came together, and so it was. That was pretty nice to see. And you know what? It really worked out nice because we have two family weddings next year. My sister, two of her boys got engaged this summer. And so we got a wedding now in July and a wedding
next October. Congratulations and good wishes to all the couple.
Thank you. And so my parents are going to have to be in the same place. So this was like a great little, like Mike brought them together to get all the awkwardness out of the way so that we can have, you know, good times at the wedding. So it worked out really
good. Yeah, and that's the other thing. Don't think that the sentiments about your brother snuck past me because, you know, walking to the beat of a different drummer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you said Catholic. We're Irish Catholic. So, you know, there's a place sitting at the table for a person for the first year everywhere.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know your heritage.
Well,
sweetheart.
We're not Irish. We're Slovak and Hungarian.
Oh, Vasa Slos, but the Vasa.
See, I'm not that Slovak and Hungarian. I didn't get to learn any of the language.
That means what's wrong with the water? I guess there's an alligator in it.
Okay.
Okay, but you know, I wanted to call about something so stupid just to spoil Roger's surprise.
Well, that's okay.
And you said Northwest Indiana, and that struck me. I was watching Windy City Live this week.
Okay.
And something about a pickled pizza.
Oh, I don't know anything about pickled pizza. I've never heard.
I'm telling you,
it's in Northwest Indiana.
I don't know if it's Northwest Indiana. Roger probably knows. But here's the thing. Okay. Where do they get the pickles? Are they the ones that we rip off of our cheeseburgers and whip them out onto the road from McDonald's?
See, now I disagree. I love the pickles from the cheeseburgers at McDonald's. And when my family members don't want them, I take them.
I pick them out first.
Oh, no. No, I think that's part of it. I
don't know. Wendy's has the sweet and sour ones. I like the butter. Well, the butter, I don't know.
Wendy's is just a whole different burger altogether. That's a big, meaty, you got lettuce and tomato, and that's like that's a meal, a Wendy's burger.
Right, but they got the sweet pickles. I mean, they're not sweet. I don't, butter, I don't know what to,
like
I can't remember what they're called.
Pickles?
Yeah, they're the sweeter ones, like you get at the BFW.
Okay.
But I love the heck out of Roger. So here's what a pickle pizza is. This is what I saw.
Okay.
This lady, she makes this cream cheese and garlic sauce, spreads it on a pizza. Then she covers it in pickles. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Cheese first. Then pickles.
Okay.
Then some more of the cheese. And then they sprinkle dill on top.
This doesn't sound good at all. Raj?
A dill pickle pizza?
You have to. Well, I'm sure that's not what Roger's bringing. Roger's bringing something with
meat.
Something you can only eat with your not bowling hand.
We're eating pepperoni. Yeah.
Now, pepperoni, you have to pick that off the top.
No.
I would not recommend picking.
BA, you're quite the picker.
Yeah.
She's a pickle and pepper.
Well, actually, you wouldn't want to see. I'm saying they were raving about it. The other thing is that because Rush, you guys left me on hold so long, my mind's going all over the place. But we come from a blended family, Matt, as well as you do.
Sure.
And we used to go bowling. Mm-hmm. So my husband had four children when I met him, and I had four children. We also had a foster child, so. My first husband used to say he wanted a baseball team, and I said, you shouldn't have left, because now we got one. But when we went bowling, everyone had different names. Like, my husband's family had natural daughters and adopted sons, so there's two, three, four names. And I, again, yeah. So when we went bowling, you know what we used to call ourselves? Like, how are we going to write all these names? We just used to call ourselves Dear Banskys.
I love it.
Do you know if you go to the Foxhole Tap with nine children, they give you free wine. If you go to the bowling alley, they give you free socks. They thought I was really the mother of all these children. They give you free stuff. Like, you poor thing.
That's great. Thank you so much for checking in, BA. We really appreciate it.
I just want you to make sure that you set a place for Michael at the Thanksgiving table, my love.
All right. That sounds good. We'll do so. Thank you so much, BA. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye. You too, sweetheart.
Thanks for checking in. 312-981-7200. That reminds me, Roger, I got to tell you.
What?
Funny stories will probably come to me throughout the night as we bring things up. But so Jack is off at Nebraska, having his freshman year.
That's right.
He's having a great time, loving school. Last weekend, they had their first football game.
Ooh.
And they have like a 90,000 seat or something close to 80,000 seat stadium right there on campus.
Right. It's huge.
It's insane. And so we got to go to the first game and stuff. And so it was really great. And they won. The line was like 30. They were playing Southern Alabama. The line was like they were favored by like 36.
Mm.
They only won by 14. So we're a little concerned. They were rated 24 to start the season, which is.
Did they drop?
They dropped to 25, yeah.
Oh,
and they play, well, still.
Yeah.
They play Colorado today. So we'll see. We'll see after that. They lost to Colorado last year. So we'll see if they can turn it around. But so, you know, this happens with my brother. So we talked to Jack and said, you know, we're going to fly you home for the funeral. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay. And so he's never flown by himself. He's not the greatest flyer. When the family went to Mexico earlier this year, he was not feeling good right at the end of the flight. He tried to get up to go to the bathroom, like as we're landing. We're like, you cannot get up.
Yeah, we won't let you.
But he's just like, you know, he's unbuckling his seatbelt. We're like, what are you doing? So I'm a little worried about Jack by himself. You know, is he going to know how to go through TSA? Is he going to pull this off? So I'm talking to him during the week, and I'm saying, well, you got to do this, you got to do that. And I'm sending you your ticket on your phone. All you need is your phone and your license. Everything else, just do a carry-on. You've got your good clothes at home, blah, blah, blah. Right. Okay, fine. Talk to him the night before. He's like, I'm putting my stuff in my buddy's car, so it's there. We're going to go straight from class, jump in the car, and go. I'm like, great, that's good. All you need is your license and your phone. I got it. Okay. So Thursday's flying home. I got him on the 3 o'clock flight, so we'll get home in time for the Bears game.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls me at 2, and he's like, and I was in a work call, so I texted him, like, hey, well, he's like, oh, I just want to check in. I'm like, okay. Calls me at, like, 2:15. He's like, Dad, I don't know where my wallet is. He's all freaking out. I'm like,
oh, no.
And I'm trying hard not to just unleash a tirade of cursing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I gave you one job. Have your wallet.
Come on now. Calm down, Dad.
He's had his license for 2 years, never once lost it. But the day he's got to fly on his own.
I know.
Away from home where there's no path, you know. I'm like, oh, my God, Jack, are you serious? He's like, I don't know. We're running back to school. I'll go back in the classroom, blah, blah, blah. And so he's retracing his steps. I was at these two classes. I know I bought an apple juice. I know I used it there, so I had it with me. He runs back. He's retracing the steps. I'm thinking, okay, he'll call me. Finally, he calls me back. Or I'm trying to call him. He's not answering. He finally answers. He's like, I'm on my way back to the airport. I'm like, did you find it? He's like, no, I didn't find it. I'm like, oh, Jack. He's like, I've got a picture of my ID in my phone. Hopefully, they'll just let me use that. I'm thinking, all right, it's a small airport, but I don't know that they're going to be that lenient about things. So he goes back there, and he's trying to talk his way in, and they're like, well, you have to go through all this extra screening. You're going to miss your flight.
Oh, no.
So he calls. He's like, I'm like, God damn. So I send him back to school. I'm like, you immediately have to call and get another school, because, of course, his school ID is also in the wallet, because they would have let him fly with just a school ID, because he's only 18.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, immediately call, get another school ID, and then retrace everything and do everything, blah, blah, blah. So he goes back, he gets a school ID, but doesn't find the wallet. But so he's able to get on the 6 o'clock flight.
Oh, man.
But it was like, that is so my brother. That is so what Mike would have done.
Like, really?
Oh, miss a flight or lose a wallet or what? Totally. I was dying laughing, and I mentioned that when I spoke today. I said, you know, those of you who don't think Mike is with us anymore, he's been messing with us all week, as evidenced by Jack losing his wallet, missing his flight home for this.
And Jack never found his wallet.
Not yet. I mean, I bet it'll be turned in.
You think he might have put it in the bag with the clothes?
I said over and over again, did you check it? And I haven't looked through since he's been home, but he said when he's at TSA... And he didn't have his license. The woman's like really going through his bag. And he said, well, if you could find a wallet in there, that would make my life a lot easier.
Oh, okay.
But they did not. So I don't know. We'll see.
Oh, man.
We'll see. But nobody's used his credit card or anything. So he just dropped it somewhere. And hopefully we have to cancel everything. He's going to go get a new driver's license tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. But hopefully it'll show up.
Wow.
One of those things.
When it rains, it pours.
Teenage boys.
Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. Good morning, everybody. Matt Pavala here with you on 720 WGN, 207 in the AM. Thanks for staying up late with us. We're live in the Skyline Studios here on Columbus and Wacker. in downtown Chicago. Joining us in the studio right now is my buddy Grant Warner. He's a partner at the Karis Restaurant Group, and John Sundell, who is also with the Karis Restaurant Group. Thought we'd have him in to talk a little bit about the suburban restaurant scene and what it takes to make it in the restaurant business these days. Grant, welcome to the show. John, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Matt.
This is like a normal time for you guys. This is not like out of the ordinary really late for you, is it?
Well, a lot of our places are just closing now or open for about another hour. So yeah, we do work very odd hours.
Yeah. Does your day usually start more afternoonish?
My day usually starts around 10 a.m., and I usually work till around 8 or 9 p.m.
Yeah.
Some nights I stay late when it's busy, like we have the UFC fight or a football game, something going on at one of the rookies' locations.
Yeah. Is it generally, in the restaurant business, Friday, Saturday night are the nights? Is that where the money is made?
Yeah, Friday and Saturday nights are definitely the busy nights in the restaurant, but, you know, a lot of our restaurants stay busy throughout the week, which is one of the things that helps us be successful.
Yeah. But it's like anything else. You need the nights that are insane to really make the profits, probably, right? Is it the nights where there's a bear? Like last night must have been an insane night for the Rookies brand, at least, right?
Yeah, Rookies was really busy with the opening against the Bears and Packers. And, yeah, football is really our season for Rookies.
Yeah. Sundays all day long are pretty crazy.
Yeah, Sundays all day long. People, you know, start lining up at the doors to get in at 11 a.m. to get a good seat, you know.
Yeah. The Cubs run of 2016 must have been great.
Yeah, so especially, you know, that's always, you know, any of the playoffs or when the Cubs, Bulls, Sox, Bears, any of the Chicago teams are doing well is always good for us because it's extra business that we wouldn't normally have, especially if it's like a weeknight playoff game.
Where you wouldn't already have people in the door like you would on a Friday, Saturday night.
Exactly.
You know, it's interesting. I never really thought about the economy in that way, though. We know that sports affect our economy, but they must really affect sports bars and sports themed restaurants. I know that, like, when I'm watching a Hawks game at a Rookies, I believe you guys have lights go on or the sirens go off when the Hawks score a goal, right? Have I seen that before at a Rookies?
Yeah, it's really cool. We have something called Stadium FX, and basically, if they score, we have the red flashing lights, Chelsea dagger plays. We also have little blurbs we can play, you know, during good plays, mm-hmm. and, you know, just like you're at the stadium.
Yeah. Now, is that set up that it automatically happens, or does somebody working that night at Rookies have to be paying attention to the game to know to flip that on when the Hawks score a goal?
Yeah, you got to be paying attention. So the manager or one of the bartenders, you know, we have tablets and stuff where you can hit the button.
That's pretty cool.
It's really cool.
But so then if the Hawks suck or the Bears suck or the Cubs and Sox, if everybody just sucks, that really would affect you guys, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, football, in all the other sports, yes, but football, people still come out for the games.
No matter what.
Football, correct.
Still people coming out to hang out and watch the games.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting. So give us the rundown at Karis Restaurant Group. You guys have the Rookies brand. How many locations of Rookies are there?
Right now we have 5 locations. We have the original location, which opened in, which Bob Karis opened in 1998 in St. Charles. Then we opened up Elgin, and then we opened up Huntley, Hoffman Estates, and we opened Roselle. We're about to come up on our one-year anniversary in Roselle.
Wow. And what other? And I know Village Squire is another one of
their Village
brands, right?
Squire, actually, you know, Bobby's father immigrated here in the 60s, and he opened up the first Village Squire in West Dundee, then brought his brother over, George Karis, and they ended up opening up Crystal Lake. We have a location in McHenry, and then South Elgin is the newest Village Squire.
Okay. So Village Squire was the first restaurant in the group?
Correct, yes.
And in Weston, the one right there in West Dundee,
West Dundee,
right by my house. Oh, that's excellent. Okay. And then Old Republic is a great hamburger beer place, basically, right?
Yeah, we have another concept we opened up about a year and a half ago, Old Republic in Elgin. And we also have the Alexander's locations, which is in Elgin and St. Charles.
And Alexander's is really good right off 31 there. On 90 and 31, there's an Alexander's where we have breakfast and dinner. And what I love, my favorite thing about Alexander's is, because there's some great breakfast restaurants, and it's a very popular thing right now, are these breakfast restaurants that close by 2 p.m. every day, and that's it. But I think anybody loves once in a while having breakfast for dinner. And all these great breakfast places are never open for dinner, but Alexander's has at least partial breakfast menu all day long.
Yeah, breakfast all day. The interesting thing about the restaurant business is, you know, people are always looking for the new best thing, whether it's fast casual or casual dining, and breakfast has been a big segment here in the last few years, so there's been a lot of breakfast concepts open up all around.
Are you surprised? And they've got a lot downtown, too, and every town we're in, there's a bunch of different places that are these just open till 2 p.m. breakfast places. I'm always surprised by that because most restaurants are an all-day affair. And I always think, boy, they must, because you're still paying the same rent, you're still paying all these other things. I guess your electricity is less or certain things like that, and your employee costs are less. But to own the property or rent the property and do all those things you do to not have it open those other 8 hours of the day that you could be making money is always surprising to me. Are you surprised that those have been as successful and popular as they are?
Not really, because breakfast places are interesting because our two main costs in the restaurant business are food and labor. And mm-hmm. both those, food and labor, have been increasing drastically over the last few years. But with breakfast, you have a lower food cost. And your labor cost is lower, too, because you're not keeping cooks on all day. You're closing at 2 o'clock. So you're able to keep those costs better in line almost with a breakfast place, whether with labor and food, mm-hmm. To help control your bottom line a little better.
But that's interesting because my assumption would be, Grant, that dinner plates generally cost more. And I think they generally do, like, you know, roast beef, a steak, or things like that people are going to order dinner. If you have a higher cost there, still the same labor cost. I know the food costs also undoubtedly higher. But I would think that that's where the money, if we're taking alcohol out of it, and food-wise, I would have thought that doing well at dinner is going to make you more money than doing well at breakfast.
Yeah, you're carrying a higher cost inventory, okay. So you're spending more to make that money at dinner than you are for, per se, like bacon and eggs and hash browns.
And thereby taking a bigger risk? Because then if people don't show up, you still bought that food versus breakfast, it's a little more easy to carry that burden?
Yeah, so most of our restaurants are sitting on about a $30,000 inventory that's, goes bad in 2 to 3 days. So
you got to churn it.
Yeah, so volume is key and, keeping the products fresh.
Interesting. Have you guys thought about opening a breakfast place? Have you guys talked about that at all? I mean, how what is the debate within a restaurant group in what is the next thing? Because I imagine with rookies, you've opened 5 rookies, so that's a success. You've done multiple Village Squires. You've got this Old Republic. What do you guys sit around talking about when you figure out, is it more about location or is it about what the trends are? How do you guys decide what's next?
We talk about it all. So we talk about, what we can do to increase traffic, where, trends are going to stay current with the menu. Fast casual is a competitive part of our business now that is, we have to think about because...
What is fast casual?
Fast casual is, say, the Paneras and the Chipotles of the world where people are going and they're getting some pretty good food, quickly. So what can we do to bring them into our restaurants to get them to sit down, to get waited upon? We stay consistently have to be training, good service, consistently, great ingredients, bringing in fresh ingredients, keeping our menu options fresh. We do specials every 3 months, change up a menu. We just had a very popular, we did a Greek fest at the Village Squire through the month of August, which was very successful for us. So, through marketing, new menu items, we try and keep the people coming in the door.
Yeah. It's got to be a constant battle, I imagine, keeping up with the trends or what's next or what's working, what's not. How much do you guys pay attention to that? Is it something that you're constantly doing the whole time? Or if a restaurant's doing well, or are you then trying to figure out, well, why is it doing well? And how do we replicate that in other places?
Yeah, so consistency is key in our business. It's when a guest goes out, they want good service, great service, great food, and consistency from one place to the next if you own multiple places. So it's the ongoing training within our restaurants to make sure the consistency's there and that they're getting that same dish and same service everywhere they go. The restaurant business guests are not very forgiving these days because there's so much competition out there.
Yeah.
So any little misstep can cost you a guest, which in return can cost you 5 guests. They say? One person tells 5, so.
Yeah, is that what they say? My production company works a lot in the veterinary space, and our friend Dr. Natalie Marks, who's owned a really popular practice here in Chicago, they work so much on their social media and their Yelp, and she's talked a lot about how Yelp reviews can make or break a small business. Is that a big deal for you guys? Do people go on Yelp and complain or like, the restaurant, and is that an issue you really have to watch?
They do. Yelp can be a little political because they try and get us to buy advertising.
Right.
And they set up their parameters, how people can write reviews, where they show up on the website when someone searches your restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
We like to look at Google reviews for a more accurate assessment of our restaurants. We feel that that's the customer that's coming in, that's going on Google. And the Yelpers tend to be more negative. mm-hmm. where the Googles are more honest, where we'll have positive, we'll have negative, and we always, anytime we get a negative comment, we always try and follow up on it, follow up with the person who made the comment, and then, you know, do some training in the restaurants to make sure things don't happen again like that.
Interesting. What is the biggest part of being a successful restaurant? Is it just, it's all about location? Is it about the food and the atmosphere? Is it about the staff? If there was one thing you said, well, this has got to work for everything else to fall in line.
You know, it's really the people that work for us. The one thing the Karis's have going for them is they've been in business for over 30 years, and there, it'd be hard to find a person that doesn't say they had a good relationship with them or they didn't treat them well. Mm-hmm. And it's just treating your people right, and knowing that if you treat them right, they'll treat our customers and guests right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being more of a family than you know, we consider it family, not employees, you know, when with our team members in our restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I imagine that is important, and then that trickles down to the customers, and they're happy they're going to keep coming back. 312-981-7200, if you have any questions about the restaurant biz, we've got Grant Werner in here from the Karis Restaurant Group. John Sundell, who's also with the group, is in with us, too. 312-981-7200, I have to ask you about tipping. I've got questions about tipping. We'll get to that next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Grant Werner and John Sundell are in from the Karis Restaurant Group. If you've heard of Rookies out in the burbs, of Alexander's, Old Republic, and Village Squire, where we actually did a Hometown Voices a few years ago with John and Marianne, right? Yeah, we did that out there with them. They're in studio with us for a little bit longer, and if you've got a question, 312-981-7200. So tipping. In general, I always give a 20% tip. Unless, like, something goes terribly awry. And then I still tip, like, 15% because I feel bad. But in general, what are people tipping at these days? And how important is that for the servers that they're getting those tips within their wages?
It's very important. You know, our servers work really hard. A lot of them work doubles. A lot of them, it's their full-time job. Some of them are, you know, supporting a family. Mm-hmm. I'd say 15 to 20% is still the average tip. You know, sometimes a little bit more, you know, some people a little bit more generous. But yeah, you do see it in tips. If people are not happy, they will tip a little less. But yeah, for the majority, you know, we seem, our servers and our team tend to do pretty well with 15 to 20% tips.
I remember last time I was a waiter was like 30 years ago when I was just in college in the summer. And if there was a party of eight or more, we could add on a tip. Is that legal to do? I remember that being banned in Illinois. Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, they didn't ban it. They changed the laws around a little bit where now the business has to pay taxes on that gratuity. So we basically eliminated it in our restaurant. So we didn't, because, you know, then you have to track it and file it. So we don't do that anymore. We don't add gratuity.
That makes it tough on the servers, though.
It does. But, you know, if they're giving good service, they should get a good tip.
They should. They should, but I'll tell you what, when I was a server, then you get this group of high school kids in, and then they would all ask for separate checks, so you couldn't add on the, and then you get stiffed on the tip, because high school kids are high school kids.
Yeah, I remember, too, when I served, it's, you know, you might get that bad tip once in a while, but in the long run, you make out
okay. The good
okay.
ones make up for it, definitely.
Correct.
That's for sure. 312-981-7200. Oh, Jim has a comment. Jim's in Elmhurst, and he's on 720 WGN. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Well, I could be better if I was at Rookies.
No, there you go. Although they'd be closed, they'd be kicking you out, so you'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I've had that happen a couple times.
Elgin's open till 3 right now.
Oh, are they really?
I've got closing time at Roselle and at Hoffman Estates.
Nice. What did you want to say about Rookies?
My friends and I love going to Rookies for all the sporting events and their drink and food specials. They get great food. And then we hit Village Squires quite a bit for birthdays and anniversaries and just regular during the week dinners. And we hit Alexander's quite a bit, too, for weekend breakfast. Yeah. I love all their establishments. It's great food and great prices, great staff. It's awesome.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much for checking in, Jim. We really appreciate it. Look at that. Did you plant that, Grant? Was that set up?
Jim, thanks for the feedback. We appreciate it.
You got a frequent flyer there. I read a story a couple of years ago about McDonald's and about their profits and how it works. And it was interesting because he makes me think of this, Jim does, because it talked about how they have like a certain segment of the customers at McDonald's, like, are there all the time, like every day, and they buy so much, and how important they are to their overall profits. A guy like Jim, who sounds like he's eating at your establishments very often, is there a certain segment that is regular customers that are there that you guys, you know, really rely on, that they come in all the time? I mean, not just within your group, but within any group. Is that, do you guys think about customers in that way? Like, there's people that come in for events, there's people that come in because they're in town that are casual, and then there's people that are here all the time that we really get to know, and they end up being a core part of, like, of a property itself?
Yeah, that's a big part of our business. We, you know, again, just like we treat our team members like family, we like to know our guests, be on a first-name basis with them, shake their hands. We have a lot of regulars that come in, to especially rookies that, you know, sit at the bar for sports, you know, Alexander's for breakfast and lunch, and other concepts as well. And we always try and be on a first name basis, you know, talk to them, know about them and their families, yeah, and what's going on. And it makes people feel special. And it's like, it's kind of like, you know, I hate to say this, but going back to Cheers, you know, mm-hmm, where everybody knows your name. Sure. You know, people like to go where they're recognized, people know them, and they're comfortable.
Yeah, and that makes sense, especially if it's somebody who's not just coming for a dinner with somebody and leaving, but if people are hanging out, then they need to feel comfortable, and that makes them want to keep coming back, I guess, as sort of a place I go hang out and I feel good and enjoy myself.
Absolutely, and, you know, again, consistency with the food, the service, you know, cleanliness, yeah, of the restaurant. We take great pride in making sure, you know, we execute on all those levels.
When you guys are looking at the menus that you have, how do you decide something new that goes on a menu? How much ideation goes into that, or testing of a food, or is it about what you read about, or this is a hot thing right now, or how do you guys do that?
So one of my other roles within the company is I'm also our corporate chef, so I'm constantly working on menus and improving our, you know, our operations. And I used to work back in the day, I worked for some chains, and I have a lot of experience there. So, you know, chains put a lot of money into research and, mm-hmm, what's popular, what's trending. So we'll a lot of times look to see what some of the more popular concepts are doing, what's trending. You know, I just went to an American Culinary Conference in Orlando where they talked about menu trends coming up, and we're always trying to be on top of that, see what other people are doing, and stay competitive in our market.
That's interesting. You know, Portillo's just went national. Dick Portillo sold Portillo's for
lots of money.
Like $1 billion or something crazy, right? Maybe not that much, but a lot. And now they're opening up across the country. And I've got a story here in the Tribune about Cooper's Hawk, which is like the fastest growing suburban restaurant and winery in the nation. With the Karras family, you know, you've got a bunch of rookies, you've got some other things. What is the idea of a local restaurant chain like that? Is it now it's just a local, or are there always in the back of your mind ambitions to find that one thing that hits that people want to invest in and take national?
You know, I don't think we're ever going to go national. You know, maybe if Bob retires in Florida or Arizona one day, he might open a restaurant. But, you know, we're pretty happy being small, where we can control what's going on. We can control our people. And, you know, we're at 11 units right now.
Is that considered small, or is that medium size?
I mean, as far as privately owned restaurants, it's a good size. To not be franchised or be a national brand, yeah. But you know, we're comfortable with the 11. Everyone in the family can have their hands on every location and what's going on, and you know, you just better control, and yeah, and that's where they're comfortable, kind of in that family-owned restaurant. And within our communities, you know, pretty much from up and down Randall Road from McHenry all the way to St. Charles.
That is a tough thing, though, in a business, isn't it? I have a small company, and when you can't have your hands in everything, that's very tough to bring somebody on and actually hand stuff off to them. So that's interesting. You're saying somebody in the family can be part of every one of them. Is that kind of one of the things that's thought about, is if we grow too much, then we really have to know who's running these things so that we can feel good about the quality and everything else with it?
Yeah, so about, you know, I've been with them for about 7 years, and they brought me in with my experience to kind of help them, you know, expand a little bit, to bring some consistency in operations and the food. And it's something, you know, Bob always tells me that without me, they couldn't have done. And, you know, but, you know, they're not going to be hiring 3 or 4 guys like that. They're going to keep it small, keep their hands on it. But, yeah, you know, it's just like the smaller you are, the more you can control, and you might as well have what we have and just be able to have good quality, good food without, you know, expanding ourselves too much.
All right, what's coming up at the restaurants? What should people be looking out for?
So right now, it's we got a great deal going on. You know, we have our dollar burgers at Rookies all through the month of September, and the great thing about that is football season's starting, so you can actually come in, get a dollar burger. So it's funny. I think we talked about this a little bit at the break, but
it's a dollar burger.
Not a dollar with chips.
Cheeseburger. It's a dollar burger. And if I want cheese on my burger, what is the upcharge on that?
See, it's not an upcharge. Let me set the record straight here.
Okay. Didn't order a burger.
It's a $3 cheeseburger. You're still getting Angus beef, fresh patty, broche bun, aged cheddar cheese for $3. But so yeah, it is a $2 upcharge.
That's a good spin. You should be a politician.
Yes. We've
$2 for a slice of cheese.
No, it's a $3 cheeseburger. I'm sticking with that. It's still a great deal, you know. And then right after September, we have our dollar chicken sandwiches going on. We're always running different special menus at the different restaurants every quarter. We got Oktoberfest coming up at Alexander's, Old Republic, and Village Squire. You get some fresh, you know, homemade schnitzels, some spetzel. We're just always constantly, you know, keeping up with the times and seasons.
You know, it's funny is I spent a decent amount of time at Rookies over the years. Whenever we, with the kids in baseball, we're at Rookies a lot, and you've been kind enough to sponsor our softball team for the last year. And we always came in on Thursday nights after our games. In the fall, we switched to Tuesdays, and I had to miss this week. But Jim, my buddy, called me. He's like, "Hey, we're Rookies, and we're playing bingo. You could win $7,000 at this thing."
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of our restaurants, we do bar bingo. We have trivia nights where they change up the themes. It could be Disney. It could be, you know, old movies. And that's all our locations, not just Rookies. We do those everywhere except Alexander's. We have a trivia night or a bar bingo.
Yeah, it's cool. There's karaoke. Always something good going on. Is there a website or places you want people to visit for more information on any of the properties?
Kind of all our websites are linked together for Rookies. And Alexander's and Squire. So if you go to one website, then it'll link you to all the other websites.
And what's one of the websites that people can visit? Should have known that right away. We got to look that up now, don't we? I'll bring you that after the news. You'll give it to me off the air, and I'll tell everybody. But all the Rookies locations in Elgin and where are all the Rookies locations? Elgin, Roselle.
Huntley.
Yeah, we got Elgin, Roselle, Huntley, Hoffman Estates, Elgin, and St. Charles.
Dollar burgers all month long. Go see a Bears game. Go see a Cubs game at a Rookies. Have a dollar burger and have a couple of brews. And look for Grant and John when you're in one of those locations.
Well, hopefully you can hit the score thing when the Bears score more points than last week.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is we didn't get to hit the touchdown button this yesterday for the Bears.
That's right. Do you guys have something that goes crazy in the restaurant just like for the Hawks?
We do. For Cubs, Hawks, Bears, everything. We got a little fun action of some stadium effects within the restaurant.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, real quick, Robert in Oakbrook has a question for you guys that I think is pretty interesting. Let's get this in real quick before news. Hey, Robert, how are you? You're on 720 WGN.
Hey, congratulations. Listen, those $3 burgers are better than, there's another chain out there that charges you $15, and Rookies has got a better burger than they do. So I'm telling you, it's a hell of a deal.
All right, I'll let them know.
We appreciate it.
What was your question?
But my question to you is, why Illinois? Why with the crazy taxes? I have a small little cottage on the chain of lakes, and what I pay in real estate taxes is nuts. And you know you pay high taxes here. Why not Wisconsin right over the border or Michigan or Indiana where taxes are dirt cheap?
All right, we'll have them answer it. Thanks, Robert.
We have our the Karras family has their roots here since the 60s, and they've pretty much have been open up a restaurant every decade since, and, you know, they're just not as easy to up and move. And, you know, there's a lot going on in Illinois right now, and I'm not going to comment on that, but, you know, we're happy with our locations, and, you know, who knows what the future holds. And by the way, that website is rookiespub.com.
So. Rookiespub.com for all the information. Cookie texts, can Rookies open in Kenosha, Wisconsin? So there you go. Another
Kenosha, Wisconsin. You know, we just opened up Roselle. You never know. If there's a good opportunity, who knows where we can end up.
But it's got to get tough to get out of, like, all of your locations, like you said, up and down Randall Road in that area. It's easy to get to all of them for your deliveries. Everything you order probably can be within a group. When you expand like that, that's got to get tougher because now you're, you know, all different suppliers, everything has got to be a little bit tougher, right?
Yeah, I mean, the way we open restaurants is we can pretty much, we have a system in place where we go in and, you know, we train, we open. So that's not as tough, but, you know, just right now we're comfortable with the 11. Who knows what the future holds. I do have a little surprise. I can't say the name of the concept, but we did just close on a property in downtown Geneva, which will be our 12th restaurant.
Nice.
But we're not announcing what concept we're putting in there yet.
Is it a name I've heard tonight?
Maybe.
Possibly something new altogether?
Possibly.
Okay. All right. Well, when is that news going to break?
That news will break, you know, as the time goes on.
When we decide.
When we decide, yeah. We're shooting, you know, the Nick Smith is one of the family members. He married into the family, and he's been taking care of Old Republic and Elgin. That's his concept. And, you know, he's young. He's a little younger than everybody else, and he's working on expanding, and he's got some really good ideas, and I'm looking forward to
that. This is what the
Karras
family does. You marry in. We test you out. We put you in one restaurant for a while. We see how you do, see if you're going to make it in the family, and then we'll lift you up after that.
You know, it's funny. That's exactly what they did to him, but it's worked out, and he's doing very well. And if you haven't been to Old Republic, check it out in Elgin.
Our family has been to Old Republic. Really good burgers there. It's a really good restaurant. It's a lot of fun. Grant and John, thanks so much for coming in tonight. RookiesPub.com. Check out more information. And as he said, Dollar Burgers all this month in September at all the Rookies locations. All right, let's get some news headlines. In the morning. Thanks for staying up late, everybody. Matt Pabala with you here on 720 WGN. Raj, how did your Evanston Wildcats do this weekend?
Ooh, they lost.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Unfortunately, it was a high scoring. Let me double check for you. And now I got to type this in. Hold on a second.
All righty.
Darn computers. I think they lost by a touchdown.
Too bad.
Yeah. Played a suburban school. They're both suburban schools. And I looked it up just for you right before the show. And now, sports, where are you? There you are. I have to look for Illinois. There we go, prep scores. And I want to look at this. He's so good at this.
Are you complimenting yourself as you search?
Unfortunately, yes.
He's good at that.
I'm good at that.
Good at complimenting
yourself. Finishing the search. where is it? What happened? I did a search and it didn't do any search.
Hey, Roger, I finished my search. Would you like it from my end?
You know, your computer doesn't have to. Go ahead. What? Evanston lost by, more than a touchdown. Lost by two touchdowns.
Yeah,
Lincoln Way West.
Oh, that's
score?
Right. Yeah.
38-24. And whose school are we looking up there, Mr. Babala?
Oh, on my end, I was looking up the other Evanston team.
What other Evanston team?
The one we play the game.
The Northwestern Wildcats.
Oh, the Northwestern Wildcats.
They played today. Yeah. They're off this weekend.
Yeah, they're off.
This weekend, yeah.
I would play one game and then get off. That's weird.
It's your bye week.
You use it up that early?
Well, that's determined by the Big Ten, by the league.
This is before Big Ten, though.
Huh? No,
they're still in
the Big Ten. Doesn't matter if you're playing a Big Ten team or not.
Are you sure the Big Ten determined their schedule that they have this bye week off? Because usually I thought they set up on their own still the games that happened before the Big Ten schedule.
I don't know.
I thought that's how it was. I could be wrong.
My understanding is whatever the schedule that was set up, that's what...
I thought that's just the Big Ten schedule. I thought the teams still set up their own preseason.
I don't know. The preseason. It's the season.
Yeah, it's the season.
This is theirs. They started last week.
But they didn't start the Big Ten.
It doesn't matter.
I think it does.
The total record.
Well, I know that. But not in the Big Ten. It's your Big Ten record that
we
matters.
We have to call up Mr. Cat.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. Tell him up. Let's hear a grumpy Dave Ennis at 2:42 in the morning. That would be great.
I'm convinced he doesn't sleep. So
he seems not
up.
To.
Yeah.
Dave, call in if you're listening.
Matt Pupala, what's your high school there?
Mount Carmel High School in Chicago,
That's
Illinois.
Right. Mount Carmel. Here
I
we go.
I believe they won.
Finishing the search document. Okay, I know you finished the search document.
You need a new computer, Rob.
No, it's working. God bless. bless America. Mount, maybe it's...
not Mount Carmel of Mundelein, the one in Chicago.
Tex was not found.
Ben, could you look up Mount Carmel in Chicago
look up
for
Mount
us?
Carmel.
They played, who was it, Main South? Was that it? I think.
But which one did you say it was again?
Sure. Yeah.
Mount Carmel, Chicago.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Chicago, yeah. Mount Carmel over Maine South. 21-14 winners.
Boom.
Woo-hoo!
Now, what did you say the Evanston Wildcats lost by again?
Two touchdowns.
The score was?
38-24.
So here's what you do, Raj.
Yeah.
We'll make it all better.
Have more pizza?
Get out your Sharpie.
Oh, oh, why did I not know you were going there?
And then in front of the 24, you just draw a 1.
Did you
and
see?
You guys won 124-38.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh. Sure. Okay. It's easier when you only have a single digit.
It would have been better if they lost, like, you know, 6-0, and then you could have won 10-6. I
right,
agree.
Right.
I saw great. The memes have been great this week.
I know.
After Sharpie Gate.
Did you see the Bears one?
Yes. Yeah, somebody just they final score and they drew in with Sharpie the one.
So yeah. So they beat the Packers 13-10.
Yeah. Good for us.
There's some, yeah, there have been some very imaginative ones. Those memes.
Oh, the memes. This has been the best meme story since the Revolutionary Airport.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of one of the, you know, he's been criticized, President Trump, for when it's raining, he'll walk with an umbrella, and Melania's walking in the rain.
Right.
He's holding the umbrella. There was a great picture of them walking where he's holding an umbrella, and they, with a Sharpie, drew the umbrella over her, too.
Did you see the one where he's got his arm reaching for hers, and they drew in her arm?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah,
somebody else
from the back, and she's walking with her arms at the side, and someone drew in the arm, reaching out to his to, like, hold hands while they're walking.
There's a great one where he's talking, both of his hands are up, and with a Sharpie, they drew bigger hands for him.
Yes.
I like that one a lot. There have been some really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been fun. That
very imaginative.
That is a bizarre, bizarre story. I don't understand.
He's still on it, too.
Well, that's
he's still
the,
on it.
That's the thing that's bizarre to me, is I understand he misspoke, or he thought the information was something different.
Yeah.
I don't understand when you're at a place where you just refuse to ever go, yeah, I got some bad information. You know, it's not a big deal.
I think that's just his style. It's been
just not
his style
nature.
Since day one.
He refuses to ever
right.
be wrong about anything. It's yeah. just amazing to me that it's to the point where Noah is issuing a statement, like trying to sort of defend him by an unnamed spokesperson, you know, and then the National Weather Service comes out mad at them for doing that, saying this is disgusting that we're like changing this now to just acquiesce to this.
Yeah.
But, you know, certain people are funded by things and they're probably scared. Like, well, we better just go ahead and do this. Oh, it's just crazy. I love it. I just love it. It's over a stupid misstatement. And then the map. I mean, that's just great. If somebody just, well, we'll just draw this.
Let's draw the black line here.
I mean, you
it has
think,
nothing to do with the map.
If I'm going to do that, I'd say, hey, just redo the map and expand that circle out a little further.
Right.
Let's make it look
part
right
of that. You know.
And go, hey, this is what I got. You know, back me up on it or donate your will. But, you know, you'll face the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually is where you're like, well, that looks like that's what he saw. But, you know, yeah, you look at, well, it's a Sharpie. I mean, somebody just drew that on there. Oh, God, that was funny.
Yeah. And there are more important things in the world.
You would think, but this is what we're talking about, so maybe that's the point sometimes.
I know.
Because we all wonder.
Wonder, who be doo be doo. Who wrote the book of love?
What year? What's the band?
Huh?
What year? What's the band? Come on.
What's the year of the...
Come on, John Records Landecker.
No,
tell
not
me.
John Band Records Landecker.
Year,
there's only
year,
one John Records
song.
Landecker.
No, there's two, because there's a 45 and a 33.
What?
I don't know.
Oh, that's just like not... That was supposed to be a joke. Okay.
Why, thank you, Roger.
Who was it with the Shabooms?
I don't know. You sang the song.
Yeah, I know. Well, because tons of songs come to me. I don't know everything about them. I think it was the Shabooms, but I'm probably wrong.
The Shabooms.
Does the monotones sound correct?
Possibly.
Maybe 1958.
And that's
Ben,
sure.
You're quick on the lookup. I think they hire Ben to be a newsroom shadow.
I think
for
he
Roger,
should because
every time you start clicking away, he
you know
just
why
the answer.
You know why?
better computer? I am very at ease with the pizza right now.
Are you? Thank you, Roger. That's the most pizza we've ever had. That's a lot of pizza.
I told you I was celebrating.
That's a lot of pizza.
That's a lot of pizza, baby.
Taking some home to the grandgirls.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. Well, you got to take some home.
Although maybe not, because at 3 o'clock, we got a big group coming in. Paranormal.
And oh, that's right.
When you're searching for the paranormal, you get hungry.
And you know, when they come in, the ghosts come in with them. And I'm sure ghosts are hungry, and they eat pizza.
The ghosts are hungry, too.
Yeah.
Speaking, we were mentioning memes. Our friend Deanna just texted in that Amy Guth had a hilarious screenshot of two back-to-back tweets asking if she'd won Timeline Bingo. And one was the CNN tweet, President Trump called a Fox News correspondent to the Oval Office to argue he wasn't wrong about Alabama, and they show the picture of Trump and showing his map with the Sharpie.
Mm-hmm.
The tweet above that, and you know, your tweets just appear in your timeline.
Right.
Or whatever they are. So these weren't connected. But she had another tweet that somebody wrote, going to send this word definition to myself every day until I die. And it was a tweet from Merriam-Webster. And it said, a mumpsimus is a stubborn person who insists on making an error in spite of being shown that it is wrong. Merriam-Webster tweeted that, and that just showed up together in her timeline.
Just, yeah.
And Goose said, hey, did I win Timeline Bingo?
Yeah, I think she did.
I think she did, too.
Yeah.
I think she did, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So Northwestern has the day off.
Right.
The Cubs are playing still in Milwaukee this weekend.
Right.
They lost today. They lost last night.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they won the night before.
And they won the night before. So they're back to three games out of first.
It was 2.5 at yesterday. Is it three now?
I guess it could be 3.5 even. I don't know what St. Louis did.
I don't either.
And where are our White Sox this weekend?
They lost.
They're at home, though.
At home, yeah. And then I think they head back out on the road.
So do we have a day game today, then?
No, evening. Night
playing
game.
Saturday night game, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you got that. You got your Bears in regroup mode.
All right. Let's see here. National League. The Cardinals are... Well, Cubs still 2.5 games out.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Cardinals, what did they do?
They must have lost.
Where are we here? 9-4 they lost to the Pirates.
Oh, good. Thank you, Pirates.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that you're not very good this year, you came through for us.
2.5. I don't know. I lost a couple of weeks somewhere.
You did? What happened?
I don't know, because I don't recall. I know that it hasn't been great the last 10, 15 games, but
The Cubs are so up and down.
I know. It's driving me nuts. I can never keep track of the record, and I don't know where they suddenly fell 2.5 games behind.
When they blew right before they won those two games against Seattle, they lost. Didn't they get swept at home right before that?
I don't think they got swept. Did they get swept at home?
They
have a 7-3 record for the last 10 games. Here, let me pull it up. Hold on.
Lost two in a row then at home. Because they had come right back up and been just like a game out.
Oh, wait. No, they lost two games to the Brewers.
Yeah.
They lost two games to the Brewers. Then they beat the Mariners.
I think they had
beat the Mariners.
I want to say they had gotten it within like a game and a half of the Cards, and then they lost those two games of Brewers. I think the Cards won both their games.
I gotcha.
Something like that.
So it just happened fairly recently.
They've just been so up and down. They go sweep the Mets in New York, then they come back and they lose.
Yeah, that's what did the three losses with the Nationals.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I see that now. Yeah.
That didn't help.
Yeah. Yeah, they are up and down.
Yeah, just the week before, they lost all three to the Phillies.
Yeah. And then they go sweep them. I mean, they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And I was, you know what, because I had things going on, I haven't paid as close of attention this week. The first game that Ben Zobrist did play in, he had a nice game. He made a great play in the field. He had gotten a walk. He had scored. He had done some other things, so it was a nice return. Has he played since then? Or played much since then? Or what's he doing?
I haven't paid attention. I remember that first game back.
Yeah.
Everybody was like wondering. They couldn't care how well he did. They just wanted to know what his walk-up music was going to be.
And it was still the Benny and the Jets song by his wife, right?
Was it?
I thought it was. Am I wrong?
I
thought he was
know.
Sticking with the song.
So for the Brewers, let's see, 9-3 against the Mariners. So that was what, 3 days ago?
He was 1-for-2, had a walk and a strikeout. Brewers on the 5th, he was 3-for-3 and shut out yesterday, 0-for-4.
On the 5th, Ben Zobrist went 3-for-3?
No, I'm looking at 3 hits, 3 at-bats.
No, he was...
2 walks?
Yeah, he was on base 5 times.
Wow.
Yeah,
2 walks, 3 hits.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
But then Friday, he was...
0-for-4. Two strikeouts.
The fact that he had one really good game makes me happy, because I was really questioning this whole thing about bringing him back when he was sort of part-time rehabbing for it.
Yeah.
In the minors. So, well, good. I hope it works out. I hope he does well. And hope the Cubs can you know. It's funny because I've been looking forward to this month for a very long time. I thought the Bears are going to be good this year. This is going to be great. Cubs are going to be in a pennant chase. The Cubs are in a pennant chase, and the Cubs are still a game or two up in the wild card, I believe. So they're a wild card team at the very least if the season ended today. Although you'd like them to win the division, not face that one-game playoff. But I thought the Bears were going to win that first game, and now Ben was telling me they're going to the Patriots next week. I didn't realize. I knew the Bears have a tough schedule this year, but God, I didn't realize now they're going right to the Patriots. That sucks.
Did you see those Bears fans bits?
The super fans?
Yeah.
I saw the Peyton Manning one, and I saw the Brett Favre one.
Yeah, those are the only two that I've seen.
Yeah.
They were funny.
I'm going to correct myself.
Is it
not the Patriots.
Oh, good.
It's the Broncos.
Oh, that's right. They're going to the Broncos.
Yeah, that is much better.
Yeah, that is much better.
Much
Thank
better
you.
Situation.
That is a much better situation. I'm very happy about that. Well, good. Well, so, but they still got to go on the road, going to Mile High, where actually Vic Fangio is coaching now, right? Isn't he the head coach of Denver?
Yeah.
So they got to face their old defensive coach. That's going to be interesting. They need to win. I know there's no must-win game two of the season, but there kind of is this year.
After what happened on the first game, they must win the second.
Yeah, they've got to win that game if they're really going to have the season that we're hoping. I saw, speaking of memes, Raj, I saw a meme tonight on Facebook. A lot of times people have this old Scooby-Doo meme where it's, I think it's Fred pulling a mask off something.
Uh-huh.
And so he's pulling a mask off. The mask he's holding now is Trubisky. And underneath it's Smokin' Jay Cutler.
Oh, no.
Jeez. I thought that was a really good one.
I don't know how they come up with these things so quickly.
People are good. Got to give them credit.
Yeah,
people are good.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. We've got the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up in a few minutes, and then the paranormal at 3 a.m. on 720 WGN. Six in the morning, 720 WGN. Roger.
Yeah.
I have in my studio.
Tubular Bells, by the way. Go ahead.
Tubular Bells by Mike
Oldfield.
Oldfield?
Yeah, and he played every instrument.
Sounds like one instrument.
No, it lists on the album every instrument. He overdubbed everything. He played that whole one side of the album. Very cool.
Very cool.
The Exorcist.
Joining us in studio right now. From U.S. Paranormal Research, Brian Meisinger and Nicole Ripa. And from the Chicago Paranormal League, my cousin Scott Musial. How are you doing in the league this year? What place are you in?
I'm still like rookie. So
okay.
I don't even know what that means. But
well, yes. You say you're in the Chicago Paranormal League, so it sounds like...
I'm actually the head honcho. I run it. You know, so
I'm in the Chicago Paranormal League. We're having a tough season. We lost 2-0 to the U.S. Paranormal Research the other night. You know, it sounds like...
Yes, it's been a tough season so far, yes.
Or you get the standard, I'm in first place in my other league.
Yeah. We're in first. We're the best. Guys, thanks so much for joining us. Scott and Brian, you have been with... What was that, about 6 months ago?
May?
When yeah, I think it was May. It was right before the Antioch event.
You brought in a new recruit, Nicole.
We did.
Who just joined U.S. Paranormal Research. Is that true, Nicole?
I've been in about a year.
Oh, you have been?
About a year now.
Okay, so you're not a rookie anymore.
Well, depends.
Okay.
No, she's actually pretty awesome. So.
Okay. So I got to ask you, because Nicole, I don't believe in this stuff.
And I say that. And when we did Crosstalk tonight, I said to John, who was doing the show before us, I said, do you believe in any of that? He's like, no, I don't believe in any of that. I said, but do you not believe in enough that, like, if they were going to do something weird in the studio, you'd be okay with being a part of it? He said, yeah, I wouldn't want to do that. And I feel the exact same way. Like, I don't believe in this at all, but, like, if you guys start conjuring crap up, I'm going to freak out.
We're not conjuring
anything. No conjuring.
There's nothing about that.
No conjuring.
No. Why, thought? Do you want us to?
Have you thought about that before?
Well, we do have a pocket Ouija board somewhere, but no. No. That's not going to happen.
No.
Why not? Okay.
Well, but if you don't believe in it, why would you be freaking out about it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's a complete contradiction.
Because it's the unknown?
Because it's like, you know, I don't believe in that. But I don't want to find out that I'm wrong. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there is a reservation about the possibility of
Absolutely.
It.
I'm not like completely, but I'm kind of like, come on.
I'm sure that there's probably many times that you have kind of cocked your head to the side and said, did that really happen? Or did I really hear that? Or caught something out of the corner of your eye? Or just had something weird fall off a shelf? Or
sure.
Something that shouldn't have happened? And you're like, okay.
Yeah. But I assume that's just nothing.
Life being life?
That's just life being life.
Sure, if you want to take it that way, absolutely.
I've never walked back into the kitchen and all the chairs are rearranged like in Poltergeist.
Oh, that doesn't happen at your house?
No.
No, okay.
That's the dog's.
You should stop by my house every once in a while.
Does that happen all the time?
Not necessarily. Furniture moving, that hasn't happened in a couple of years. That's another story. But there's always something going on in our house. Actually, one of the most recent things is my wife and I were actually sitting at the dining room table. Kids were downstairs with us. Mm-hmm. Dogs were downstairs. They already ate breakfast or something. We're sitting at the breakfast table. And all of a sudden, the upstairs lid of the toilet dropped. It's a soft closed toilet lid. So even if it was standing open, it wouldn't be 5+ minutes that all of a sudden the thing decided to drop. Soft closed lid isn't going to drop either.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody was in the house.
How are you sure it was that?
Because there's only a distinct sound that, I mean, I'm used to be a former plumber, so I know what a toilet seat sounds like. And on top of it, my wife is sitting right across from me, and we heard the toilet seat, and I looked up at her, she looked at me, and I was like, is that what I think it is? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, that's the upstairs toilet lid. She's like, yeah. And I'm like, and we're all down here. She's like, yeah.
You go look.
Okay, but yeah. All right, so say that's true. Why the hell is some spirit shutting a toilet lid just to freak you out? That doesn't make sense either. Why would they do that?
You know, I don't think that it's necessarily to freak you out. It's just to say, hey, I'm here. How's
Why
it going?
Is that? I'd be like, come on! Don't shut a toilet seat.
It's not like they're going to call you on a cell phone.
But why not? If they have the power to do these things... Why are they?
Because it's messing with you. Okay, come on.
Why are they messing with us?
If you were like in the afterlife or something, wouldn't you like to play some tricks on people just to do it?
I would. But here's the thing. You get one once in a while here, once in a while there. If I was doing this, listen, my brother passed away this week. He would be like, the lights would be flashing on and off in here. Everything would be going crazy. He'd be like having a blast with it. Not, I'll just shut a toilet and then I'm not going to do anything for weeks at a time and then it's. It's, well, I mean,
but with your brother, wouldn't you be just as dismissive if the light was fluttering in and out and thinking, huh, I need to change a light bulb?
Well, that's the other thing.
Right. Yeah, there's just some gremlins.
Why are they dismissive about it?
We can dismiss as, oh, well, the light apparently needs to be changed. Let's open and slam a door right in front of me 8 times where I'd go, well, that doesn't happen.
Okay. Well,
right?
First of all,
a toilet seat might have fallen or whatever.
First of all, sorry about your brother.
Thank you.
My condolences to you and your family. But secondly, I woke up to somebody standing at the end of my bed who was dead for 15 years. I have no explanation for that.
Right.
How do I explain that?
That you were still sort of asleep and you sort of dreamed it and sort of woke
up? I would agree with you 100%. Two people in the room saw it. So we're not having the same nightmare and same dream, whatever you want to call it. When two people see it, there's something to it. One person sees it, it's experience.
Right.
You take it for what
right.
it is. Two or three people see it. There's something to it. I mean, we've seen a set of legs walk across the basement. Three people. Just legs. Nothing else.
Yeah.
How do I explain that?
Well, that's interesting.
You can't.
I mean, you're looking at the three people here. We're like very grounded. We're not going to sit here, you know. Well.
Grounded is a relative term.
With your ground,
you know, that much about me.
Where the
but,
bar is at, and we're grounded.
Let's go with grounded.
Okay,
yes.
You know, I was trying to be nice. But I mean,
Listen, none of you are wearing straight jackets. I'll give you that. However, I don't know who's looking for you right now, you know?
That's true. That is so true. But, I mean, it's... You always dismiss it at first. Mm-hmm. Something happens, something said, a noise is made, something moves. The first thing is that didn't happen. And then you look around, and if there's other people seeing exactly what you right. saw or experienced, then it's like, yeah, that really did happen. Did we get it on film? Did somebody have a recorder going?
Do we have audio? Do we have, you know, like you said, video? Do we have...
We never have good video of this. You guys showed me a video after last time you were here that was like, it was interesting, but it wasn't like, well, wow.
There are,
really...
I mean, there is
there's some great videos out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There
but that nobody like 1,000% believes, holy cow, this is...
But even if you show somebody a video or a picture, they're going to dismiss and say, well, you
because
did
it's never,
it up.
Like, perfectly clear. It's never like this,
there are
oh my
some.
Gosh.
There actually are some.
With the advent of 4K and high definition, the videos have become increasingly better.
Right. And even just the technology as far as phones, right. too.
Just, yeah, your camera phone is amazing yeah. these days. And the pictures are becoming more and more clear, and they're actually starting to get more definition in them, full faces.
Well, what's your guys' guess on, you know, legitimately, though, Scott, if a toilet closes upstairs and you think, well, that was something, why is that what is done? Is it really just to, like, sort of mess with us? And if you heard your mom's voice on the baby monitors, you're
yes,
telling us last
I've heard my mother and my grandmother.
So
yes.
that's, like, something to me that's very interesting that, like, I could see that. And if your mom knew that you could hear her voice... Why wouldn't she say, Scott and Nikki, I love you so much, don't worry, I'm fine?
Usually,
why would we get that message?
There have been other voices, and like my wife has experienced more than I, that she's heard her name called. It's usually never a full sentence. But also, at my house, we're not sitting around with recorders running or asking questions. We don't do any of that. I mean, we could.
No, I understand. I'm not saying you need to prove it to me. I'm just saying, like... Like if we're being if your mom was contacting
right.
or wanting you guys to hear her, why wouldn't she send a message that you could totally understand? Like, hey, Scott, I just want you to know I'm watching over you guys and I'm
you mean
good.
Like
I'm in a good
slip
place.
A little note underneath the door or something.
Well, if you're gonna hear her voice on the monitor or something
right.
like that, if somebody outside of our realm is contacting us or letting us know anything,
mm-hmm.
why isn't do you think that? I mean, I'm legitimately asking this. Do you think that there are limitations to what they can do, and so they do what they can? Or what's your theory on what
well, that is exactly
is?
What I was going to say, is that it's... I mean, it's there's so much speculation in the entire field of the paranormal. Part of it is that anything requires energy.
Okay.
And you have to get energy in order to make anything happen as far as move, talk, anything. I mean, we're radioactive people, basically. Mm-hmm. We're a walking
battery.
Reactor. Yeah.
We're a battery.
So the whole theory is that you have to draw energy in order to do anything. So whether you're living and or past, is that you have to find some kind of energy in order to do anything. And it requires a lot of energy to do something. And that's why you have a lot of people talk about cold spots. And all of a sudden, temperature changes within like a certain area. And then all of a sudden, you'll get some kind of activity. You'll get an answer. You'll have something happen. And the theory behind a cold spot is because you're drawing the heat from the air, which is energy, that the temperature drops. Therefore, you're drawing energy in order to... do something and or try to manifest or
we've had equipment with brand new batteries dead.
Yeah, I've had that a bunch of times. I mean
charge batteries on camcorders and when we know they're full, go to use it, it's dead.
Yeah, I mean that's happened a bunch of times, and it's always usually in the beginning of an investigation. I mean I'll load up my camera with brand new batteries and I know they're fresh batteries. I even carry a battery tester with me and they're completely drained. Okay,
where did it go?
When I first started this, I've gone through 3 phones. I stopped, and brand new phones. It hasn't been cheap. I stopped bringing my phone mm-hmm. to any investigation. Out in St. Augustine, just walking around, taking a ghost tour in and taking pictures and sending them. Fried my phone. Had some great pictures that I'm like, wow. You know, just images.
Did you enter into this, Nicole, fully believing, or have you been convinced from being part of this?
No, I always believed. I've had my own experiences and just growing up.
Mm-hmm.
My family's just always been open to it. Just grandma always had experiences walking around an old farmhouse,
mm-hmm.
always creeped out. And so it was never a foreign concept. Early in college, had my own experience seeing a, I call her Pocahontas,
mm-hmm.
an old American Indian woman, and just very dismissive initially.
Sure.
And then woke up the next morning and my room completely smells like it's on fire, and was living with my aunts and my grandmother at the time, and
mm-hmm.
completely gutted the room and what's going on, and left, came back, and the place smells like potpourri and flowers. Called everybody back up, and happened a few more times, and my significant other at the time.
And everybody else could smell it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the person who I was dating, who later married and then divorced, he was never a believer. Pocahontas followed me to college and followed me out to Connecticut, and the same sequence of events would happen, that I'd be working in an office. My office would smell like an electrical fire. They'd bring in maintenance, tear the whole office up. I'd go to lunch because I'd say, it's Pocahontas, come back.
So you would tell people like at work the story.
Only certain people.
You're right.
Call maintenance, do what you need to do.
Don't worry, it's just the Pocahontas. Yep. It's going
to
go
do
away.
Do what you
worry.
Need to do and, you know, be done with it. But the ex never believed until he also smelled and would go through the sequence. And out in Ohio and out in Connecticut, we lived, and she followed. So.
And when did Pocahontas leave you?
Actually, about a year and a half ago, it happened again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if she's ever really left. She's always around. And that's kind of how I feel. I think spirits are always around us, and sometimes we pick up and sometimes we don't. And I think sometimes with the hair on our necks, or, you know, we just kind of get that heebie-jeebie, and people are like, "Who? What was that?" I think that's, they are around us, and it's whether or not we want to acknowledge it. So I have a friend who just moved, and they're like, "Something's weird in the basement." I'm like, just talk to the ghosts. Say something, you know.
At least say hi. Or, hey, how's it going?
I moved in here. I just had a baby. I'm going to raise, you know, my new family, you know, and just embrace and say hello. And everything's been great. It's just a whole new vibe in the place. So it's just.
And don't forget, I mean, any time that you get those feelings, I mean, they're people as well. It doesn't matter. Nothing's changed. Just that they're not here anymore.
Right.
You can't physically see them.
But that's unexplainable to us, and so it's very difficult to grasp. I think
there's many things that can go down that road, but...
Of course. 414 just texted in, scientists can measure change in light from a star thousands of light years away. They can detect the most minute bits of energy. If spirits are energy, why can't they be found using the scientific method?
Because I don't think anybody's really got delved into it. I mean,
that mainstream science, it's one of those taboo subjects. It's like, well, those people are nuts. Don't talk about it. We're mm-hmm. not really going to dedicate any effort or time to it.
Yeah, we'd rather find, you know, the Higgs boson or whatever the God module is, because that's more important than actually trying to figure out what's in front of your face.
But it's not in front of our face. That's the
but
issue.
It might be. Well, it depends. It could be. Yes, it could be. And that's why I always tell people. I mean, if you actually pay attention and you're a little more in tune on your surroundings, you probably notice more than what you think.
I mean, but I think we could also create that. I think if we really started thinking, we could say, oh, this, oh, that. And we could...
The power of suggestion.
Get ourselves into that. And I think that's what a lot of people would say you guys are doing. Somebody texted, I'm with you, Matt. As Winston says in Ghostbusters, if there's a steady paycheck involved, I'll believe in anything.
Nice.
There's no steady paycheck in this.
We don't get paid for this.
We don't get paid a dime for this, but I will tell you that it costs money.
Yes.
It's not a cheap hobby.
But you guys have events. You got to make some money doing this, don't you? Or at least make your
expenses back? We
really
don't do a lot of events on the U.S. paranormal side. Occasionally we'll do an event, but mm-hmm. if anything, it breaks even and or costs us money.
Yeah.
It's very seldom that you actually make a profit.
And it's more for the experience and just right. getting other people involved and meeting other people and just being
it's
out
networking.
There. Yeah.
It's just interesting, fascinating. That's why I got into it. We were doing just an investigation kind of in the area. That's how I met Brian. And right. he was like, this has always been fascinating to me. I want to learn more. And
yeah.
just started doing investigations with them. And
like most of us. And the reason Reaper was a good fit with our team, she brings a healthy dose of skepticism. Most of us will go in and be like, no, this is what we go in to prove. You know, is it faulty electrical? Is it a plumbing pipe that's leaking? Is it, you know, whatever? Creaky floorboard. If you stand on a floor wrong, does the door open? Is that why it's opening?
Right.
But at the end of the day, when you're left with no other reasons and explanations, why can't we just accept it for what it is?
Well, does Reba have a healthy dose of skepticism? Because to me, she's all on board.
Oh, yeah.
She's on board. She's don't on get board. Me wrong. But oh, yeah. she brings...
Now, I'm your healthy skeptic. That's it.
That's why you need to get out there.
You're the other extreme. The
what's wrong with you?
I am the other extreme, yes.
And then it's kind of like, would you be willing to go on an investigation and try one?
Investigation. I would totally do that.
What are you doing September 28th?
Here's what I want. If Pocahontas is here, make it smell like it's on fire in here. That would blow me away. Like, if we come back from the news, I'm like, dude, it smells like the place is on fire. Then I'm in. Then
got,
I'll be
you
like,
got any
wow,
plans September 28th?
September 28th, I have no idea. I have
well,
to
let's
look.
Check it out when we're
what,
done
is
here.
Is this Crown Point?
No. This is something we're doing. We'll look at it afterwards, after the show. And if you're available 28th, by all means, you come on up and we'll take you out with us.
Do it.
Freaked out about that.
See? Yeah.
You know what? If you want, I'm a large man. I will hold you. It'll be okay.
Will you just carry me?
Yeah. Sure.
We can do Master Blaster. You can ride on my shoulders.
Come on,
it'll be fun.
He's a fireman. He could carry you all over the place. He knows these things.
All right. We got a quick question here. Robert is in Oak Brook. Robert, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Yeah. What they're talking about isn't. I grew up in a house that was haunted.
Okay.
Period. Okay. Not evil spirits. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it. All I know is when I was a kid and I wasn't smoking weed at the age of 12.
not judging.
but I saw figures go down the hallway and it freaked me out. And then maybe, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months later, my mom comes screaming down the hallway. And she goes, what are you kids doing? And I said, I go, Mom, I'm telling you, this house has spirits in it. And then when we were away... we had a little dog, and he got trapped in one of the rooms in the basement. And the only way to open this door was to really lift it up and close it, or open it. Same way. He got trapped inside that room. My mom called the cops. The cops came, searched the whole house, and the cops said, he goes, how in the hell did that door get closed? Now, one more thing for these guys, and I want to know about this. I don't think all spirits are people. Because from house to house that I've lived in,
there's animals. I mean, there's
animals too. Because I know when I go to bed at night, I feel a huge indentation in my bed,
mm-hmm.
and I just think it's one of my ex dogs that are just jumping sure. in bed saying hello.
Yeah, I mean, so, I've heard our past rabbit. I have heard our one of our dogs that passed away several years ago. I mean, I've heard her collar, and I mean, her collar's hanging on the wall. I mean, I've heard her walking around the house before. I mean, it's out there. It happens.
Yeah, and again, it's very strange because my wife thinks I'm nuts, but it doesn't happen to everybody.
No,
but it is to me. It's cool because you know, it's just I just leave it alone, and it's one of those things. Like you said, it's very hard to explain.
And without somebody saying that you're absolutely off the wall,
rationality, you can drive yourself nuts. You just say, "I just say, hey, Calvin, how you been, buddy?"
Right,
right.
And that's
Girl
what you can
at
do.
At the end of the bed, and I'm going to sleep.
Yep,
take All control
right,
of it.
Thank you so much for checking in. We really appreciate it. Henry is waiting on hold. We got to take a break, do the news, and then I want to ask you more about that because now you're saying that animals too. So I want to get into after the news.
Okay,
what is the spirit then? Is that the soul? Does that mean animals have souls? Is it our souls, or is it something different? Is it just energy left over from our human lives? We'll find out more about their thoughts on that after we do this. Welcome back. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you until 5 a.m. We've got Brian Meisinger, Scott Musial, and Nicole Ripa in with us. Scott and Scott is with the Chicago Paranormal League. Brian and Nicole are with U.S. Paranormal Research. Why can't you all be part of one thing? Why are there separate things?
Well, you know.
We want to be cool. You can't, you know.
But this is networking.
Yeah, that's true. The Parunity.
Scott is also part of the Supernatural Investigation Crew.
That is true.
And what is that?
That is another group that's very similar to many paranormal groups that basically kind of go out and about, do investigations, and try and gather evidence. They also have a YouTube thing that is going on. They hold events. They do some larger events, like the one that's coming up in Crown Point.
Is it basically like somebody's like, I want to start my own fun group, and so we start their own?
Pretty much,
so
yeah. And they structure it around, you know, schedules, and you know, they make up a schedule for the year. I mean, you know, they're working on next year's schedule and what places they want to go to. Try and figure in, you know, more local things or bucket list items that people on the team want. I mean, there's like, what, 7 people on their team or 5 people on their team.
So it sounds like when you guys go to places, it's kind of like, oh, something happened here, or there's always been rumors this is haunted, whatever, whatever, and then you go and you kind of do an event. Are you guys ever like, there's something that we want to really figure out for sure, and like go into a place where somebody's reported this for years, it's never been verified, and then you want to find out
absolutely.
What can we truly find out?
We're here to help. That's kind of our thing. We had an instance in Lake Geneva. Young mom kept seeing these black masses and shadows and stuff in her apartment. And EMF, which is electrical and magnetic fields, which come off of like anything in here.
Anything that has an electronic signature, anything that puts out some kind of energy.
And she had a transformer about the size of a Volkswagen right outside of her bedroom window. And she was having nightmares, health issues in this house, and we come to find out this transformer was very old, giving off huge amounts of EMF. Contacted the local power company and whatnot, told them what was going on. They replaced it. She's had no issues since.
So that was nothing paranormal.
It was nothing paranormal. It was a physical response, but we're helping. That's what we're doing.
Interesting. Do you often find that there's a logical explanation like that?
There can
more
be.
More times than not, we find a lot of logical reasons as to why things happen in buildings. Like I said, with a door opening, you know, this door opens. Well, if you step on the floorboard because, you know, it's a 2x4 construction floor and it was, you know, before codes were enacted, the whole floor moves, the door's going to open and close. It's simple things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We found faulty switches that make, you know, lights flicker, that type of thing. But there's a lot of times we find stuff that, again, when
isn't really explainable.
You have no answer for it.
Yeah,
when you hear voices on an audio recorder that you know are none of you, there's only two of you there.
Right.
And nobody else was talking at that point, and all of a sudden you have a voice
and
out of the middle of
nowhere. You're getting responses to your questions on this recorder that you didn't hear, and when you listen to it on the audio, it's there.
So there have been times you've been in a place, so you're recording, and you will ask questions of the spirits that you assume are there. You hear nothing back, but then you play back the tape, and there's voices.
Yes.
Yes.
The first investigation that I went out on, and of course, being new to this, Brian gave me the recorder and said, go ahead and take it home and, you know, write down anything that seems odd. And I'm like, you're going to trust me to do this? Okay. So I took it home. And we're at one site, and we're upstairs, and we all felt uncomfortable, you know, whatever was there. Not the friendliest vibes. And we're... You know, we kept asking, if you would like us to leave, please acknowledge, you know, knock on a wall or let us know in some way, you know, we'll leave. And we asked multiple times. And I went home and I listened to the recorder and asked it, and I heard clear as day. And asked verbally, you can hear myself saying, you know, please knock, you know, let us know, we are happy to leave. And it knocked heck of a lot louder, clear as day on the recorder. And I'm like, huh, I guess I'm going to write this down in the timestamp. And I'm like, well, this is what he's talking about is
right. And
I found anything strange.
You didn't physically hear it when you're on the investigation itself.
But it's on the audio.
So why is that?
If anybody can come up with that answer, they're going to be worth a fortune.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, can you see through walls? I mean, you'd be beyond a millionaire if you could see through walls, too.
There's a house in Whitewater that we just investigated. same thing. And there's a direct response. One of our investigators says, wow, the woodwork in this house is beautiful. And a little voice comes on and says, that's true. None of us, clear as day, that's true. So it shouldn't be there.
I mean,
it shouldn't be there, right?
Even at when we did the Antioch thing, when we did Hunt the Town, the multiple mm-hmm. locations, multiple teams, different places, we were doing reviews as soon as we were doing like an EVP session, which is an electronic voice phenomenon.
And getting responses.
Yeah. And I mean, direct responses and even names. I mean, like one of the people that we were talking to was a guy that was a maintenance guy there. And he was like one of those guys that, you know, was as old as the building pretty much. And he was answering our questions. It's like, don't touch my stuff. Don't do this. You know, did you drive a Ford or a Chevy? It's like, Ford? I mean, we're right. just getting direct answers for everything.
Why are you asking him whether he drives a Ford or a Chevy? Why not say, why are you trapped there? What happened? Are you a spirit? Are you in hell or heaven? Why are we asking
we
legitimate
ask all
questions?
Kinds of questions.
Ford or Chevy, this is what we're going
to
do.
Most it's too difficult to have a full conversation.
Are you right. for the railroad or against it? No.
Are you north or south? I mean, yeah, but you also, you kind of make it entertaining for yourself. You're sitting there, whether it's
Dude,
during the...
this could change the world if we figured out that this was really, if everybody believed and understood that, yes, this is just, you know what?
It's
makes
energy.
Me think of the TV show True Blood. The premise was, vampires have been here all along.
Right.
They've just finally let us see
no,
and acknowledge
here.
Them, right. and now we're all living together. If we finally, oh, the spirit world actually exists and they're living among us all the time, that would change.
But think about what you're
everything
saying.
Everything in the world.
Think right? about it, though. How cool would that be?
Well, yes, it would. But guess what? We're never getting there. The questions are, hey, by the way,
you drive
Ford
a Chevy or Ford. Right, right, yeah. right.
Oh, why are they there? I don't know. I asked him about the Ford thing.
Yeah.
Because I was curious.
Well, yeah. Of course. That's more important, isn't it?
No. You want believers. You want to, I mean, come on. Why aren't
because
you asking
Because even if you
something
got
like
something
that?
Like that, I mean, most of the time, I don't really ask questions. I mean, unless you know that there was... You have a strange vibe that something's going on, somebody's trapped.
I don't need to know why they're dead or what it is, but it's just like, what does this mean?
Okay,
what
Matt needs
you?
To go.
Where are you?
You need to go on an investigation because then you could ask those types of questions.
And
until you start getting direct responses, then you're going to be
but
like, what just happened?
You may get nothing.
Follow-up questions.
Exactly.
You may get absolutely nothing.
Because they don't want to answer questions. This is what kind of spirits we're dealing with.
They're exactly.
Like, I don't like those questions.
I'm going to clam up because this guy is asking the wrong questions and I don't feel like answering.
Hours of audio and hours of video to turn up Butkus. And it happens.
It happens more than you think.
And there's other times you go to a place and you're getting 20 and 25 responses and video and whatever in one location in one night, which is awesome. But other times, you can watch the paint dry.
Right.
Okay, why aren't there, if you guys are legit, and I know you guys believe that everything you is happening and you think there's reasons for this, but all the TV shows like The Hunting Bigfoot and all this crap that's out there, why isn't there a real, is there a serious TV show about the phenomenon that you would watch that you think these are people really hunting this, or is it all hokey crap?
TV has TV.
I mean, you know, as being part of a production company, owns a production company, you know what goes behind the scenes of anything.
I do, but I also think that if there was real stuff that we could put on video, people would love that.
There is.
Southern guys driving a pickup truck looking for Bigfoot.
Well,
right, it's not a bunch of guys
find...
running around with shotguns, but
right.
There's video out there.
Right.
It's been on some of these shows. It's quality video.
Yes, there is. I mean, there's definitely, I mean, like Ghost Hunters, I mean... I personally think Ghost Hunters is probably the most on the level show, even though it's been rebooted and they have a different, or one of the founding Grant is an investigator now. I mean, I think that show is like the most on the level. There isn't a whole lot of scripted things. Yeah, they probably redo scenes, but even as far as the evidence they've produced over the course of what, 8 years that it's been on, that there's some astounding evidence that they've come across.
To me, if there was astounding evidence, we'd all be like, holy crap, there's really ghosts.
But then you have, but it's everybody that's a skeptic because they start thinking of other things. Well, there can't be anybody that's living after they're dead because of, you know, this person's telling me that doesn't exist.
Right.
I disagree. I think that we are like that because that's what we assume because there's no real good like evidence.
But it's just to the point of saying that there's no other intelligent life out there.
It's like saying we're the only life in the universe.
Right. When there's millions of galaxies around us that we're surrounded by.
It's a big playground.
And the reason that we doubt it at all right now and still don't know is because there's been no actual proof to tell us
there actually is. If you were an alien, I'd fly by this planet too. But I'm just saying.
But in all legitimacy, because they're weird on that planet. I do believe there is life out there, but we haven't found it yet, so we don't know.
Okay, but then you also think that we're human. So everything gets dismissed. You know, ants don't have brains. They don't know what they're doing, but yet they can build colonies, they have families, they have, you know, a hierarchy, but they mean absolutely nothing because they're insects.
Right.
I mean, yeah. So, animals, I mean, like you said, animals are dumb. Right. But there's video of maternal instincts of a maternal animal giving its own life to save its baby.
Okay.
In the predator world.
I'm
that
sorry,
type of thing.
I don't know where you guys are going with
no,
this.
I go back to the whole
idea of can you be open-minded enough to say there's something beyond just living in this life form?
Whether it's
faith, yeah. Whether it's a belief in a supreme being, whether it is, are you reincarnated? Whatever you want to describe in that realm, can you be open to the possibility that there's something else beyond this? I choose to believe that there is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with my family members that have passed,
and the things that you've seen, the things that you've heard, the experiences that you've had.
I know what I've experienced, what I've seen.
Yeah. And like my grams, you know, she's around sometimes. I'll talk to her, you know, and I choose to believe she's present.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's interesting to me because I do believe it's a lot like faith, right? We have mm-hmm. faith that there is an ever after, there's a heaven or hell or whatever you believe in. But the general way that we've come to believe and know or vision that is it's after we pass. So we accept that this is afterwards and, mm-hmm. and that's why we don't see things. But now you're bringing in this, which is very foreign to us in the way most of us were raised in whatever religion, is that that's afterwards you go to here or here. But now it's among us.
Right.
And what does that mean? Is that they're in heaven or hell? Is it purgatory? Is it something different than we've ever
that's
been taught
because
or understand?
That it's hard
it
to
is.
Pinpoint a label to it right. and say, hey, this is what I've been taught my entire life, and you're telling me it's not real? That mm-hmm. something else is going on? I mean, that's part of it. And trying to even dismiss somebody or even to have them change their train of thought of what they've been trained their entire life is so difficult.
It is.
But I've been trained. I've been brought up Catholic and still somewhat a practicing Catholic, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I choose to believe that, is there a heaven and hell? Yes. But that doesn't mean that it's
so. So what's with the spirits
separated.
Here, then? In your mind, still being a believing Catholic,
it's
that there's heaven and hell.
Still part of heaven.
That there's free choice almost of where you can be and when you want to be.
Yeah.
They miss the train. They want to be here. They want us to know they're here.
Right. They have unfinished business. They like where they were.
But when you say they want us to know they're here, I get back to the toilet seat.
Right.
This is how they want us to know they're here, a toilet seat that just.
But that might be the easiest way to convey something that they know how.
So they're taking the easy way out? They're just being lazy
spirits? I got to be honest, Matt. I would do the same thing because I'm a chucklehead.
I mean, that's only one instance. I could give you more instances that have happened that I've experienced. And it's just something that you can't just chalk up that. It just didn't
happen, or it's, you know, gravity.
Right, we're running out of time. We do have some callers. Henry's been hanging on forever. You're in Indiana, Henry. Good morning.
Hey, Matt, I love your show. And I love it when you're there and hate it when you're not there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. Okay, I got a lot of appreciation for the toilet flushing and door shutting and closing and channel turning and stuff. But has anybody ever gotten any kind of monetary advice, kind of like here's some numbers?
Give us some help. You know, if you're going to contact
us in the afterworld,
give us something
we
can use.
Yeah, I always wonder why my second daughter always walks around and keeps on repeating these three numbers all the time. Like, I've got to play that.
666?
No, it's a little bit different. That's the other number that she says. Other than that, I'm like, I should just play those numbers on like Little Lotto or whatever it is. Just three numbers because she keeps on repeating those all the time. It's got to mean something.
Well, how are you not asking or figuring this out? You're Mr. Paranormal. You're in the league. You should be kicked out of the league. You got to find out what
but
this is.
But I'm at home. It's not my job. I'm a dad.
Oh, you guys are shitting me. Henry, that's a good question.
I wish I had the answer,
yeah,
Henry.
You know, it would be very nice.
Knock on wood, if you want us out of here.
I wouldn't be living in Illinois if I did.
So that just happened,
yes.
Thank you, Henry.
All right, good day, y'all.
All right, have a good one. Thank you so much for jumping in. You know, next time, instead of knock on wood if you want to sleep, knock on wood if you know the lottery number.
Scratch the lottery numbers on the wall.
Yes.
You know, is Apple stock going up? Knock twice. You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Let's see where they are with that, because maybe they...
Tell me where the nearest scratch-off machine that I can, you know, purchase
the winning ticket. You, theoretically, if spirits are existing into a whole other plane, could they see the future? Or do you believe the future is unwritten and it's impossible to see?
Ooh.
Well, we could go down this rabbit hole. There's nothing new under the sun. I mean, that's... History repeats itself. So I don't know if the future's unwritten or not. I'm not a psychic. I have no idea how to know. I don't know.
But
honestly, I don't know.
Spirits can see into the future, that they know what's going to happen. You believe when psychics are telling us what they see in our future, do you believe in that at all?
It depends on the psychic or the tarot card reader or something.
It's either a yes or a no. Fine, it's certain people are fraud, certain people are real.
Right.
You believe that certain psychics can tell you, yes. I see something in your future
I have had some strange details that have come up, especially from the past, that there's nobody that would know any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even looking at me physically, you can't figure out some of those things.
Mm-hmm. We have a team member who's a psychic on our team.
I tell you two. No,
I take that back. Yes, we do have two. I take that back. We have two.
I know his team better than he knows.
Well, we have two, and they're both very good. Mm-hmm. And the one especially will send me a random message of, you know, like, why are you watching World War II movies today? It's like, ooh, I should turn this channel because that's what I'm watching. How would she know that?
She talked to your wife.
No, because I'm at work. So the wife wouldn't even know what I'm watching.
Why are you watching World War II movies at work? What are you doing?
Because I'm a fireman. I'm up all hours of the night, so there's not a lot to choose from at times. But it's just things like that.
630 texts, Matt, I think your guests are trying to tell you that dismissive presuppositions tend to become self-fulfilling prophecies. I don't even know what that means.
That's a whole lot of large words.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
go with a maybe.
Jeff's in Hammond, Indiana. Hey, Jeff, how are you this morning?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good.
Good.
I'm kind of curious about what you guys feel about, and I believe in reincarnation. I kind of read a little bit of Sylvia Brown stuff, and it kind of caught my eye. I was just curious if you guys have read anything from Sylvia Brown and what you feel about, how you feel about it.
Thank you. Your thoughts on reincarnation.
I'm not very familiar with this whole...
the idea that you come back and live lives... Well,
I know that.
And live lives over and over again.
I don't see why not. I guess anything's possible.
I think there
might be some, you know, things that you might... call it the deja vu moments.
Right, I was just going to say that. The deja vu, almost everybody has those points in time where it's why is this strangely familiar?
Right.
Why have I been here before? Was it a dream? Was it a glitch
in the Matrix? But anything's possible.
Okay. You guys have events coming up. Tell us about the events coming up.
Go ahead, Scott.
No, you first.
Oh, all right. Very nice. October 11th and 12th, we are doing a spirit tour in Whitewater, Wisconsin. It's part of the Chamber of Commerce up there.
The chamber is saying, come to a spirit tour.
They're the ones that host it, and we actually helped them out a lot with it.
Okay.
And we've been doing a lot of investigations in the town, and we present our findings, and we help with the tour and that type of thing. And this is our second year doing it, and it's become pretty successful.
Is there a reason that Whitewater would have a high spirit population?
Well, Whitewater is known as the second Salem.
Okay. Were there witch trials up there?
It weren't so much witch trials as it were witches. Morris Pratt Institute was originally founded there, and it's a spiritualism in the late 1800s, 19th century. And he started that whole thing up there, a spiritual school, and he was all about warlocks and Wiccan and witches, you name it, come on over here and practice whatever you want. And there's just a lot of energy in the place. We've investigated probably a dozen and a half buildings up there, and we've had great success in all of them.
Why is it that that is the type of place you would be, or a school, or when you guys were last year, you were talking about, was the last place, was it in Antioch?
Yeah, that was in Antioch. Yeah.
We did talking town. About we some did of the different things that happened there.
A theater.
Why is it generally around tragedy? Are spirits more likely, you feel, to be stuck here because of tragedy?
I think tragedy has a lot to do with it. It's an emotional thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be losing loved ones or, you know, how they died, whatever. But
most of the time,
we've been in places where there's been no tragedy, and it's just attachments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you remember? Bad experiences or good experiences more?
Yeah, but what does that have to do with the spirits?
It would be the They're same connected. Exact thing. Yeah, there's...
How are you connected, or how are you attached to that one place?
Okay, so, but are they actually there?
Are they?
Well, that's my question. Is if they're there knocking on wood
it's
and
for you
slamming
to find
toilet
out.
Seats, does that mean they're trapped there, or just what is it then?
I don't know if there's
think
so much.
They're there, what is it? What's there?
And that's
is
a question that usually isn't answered when asked.
Right.
Because
why are you
the
here?
Ford Chevy
exactly.
Right.
what was your favorite shoe?
You know, it's one of those, like you said, it's one of those questions that rarely gets answered. We'll ask, why are you still here? And we don't get answers. We'll get nothing on that one.
But is your feeling that? What's your personal feeling that they are still there?
I think they want to be there.
Their soul is trapped?
I don't think they're trapped. I think they choose to be
why
there.
Why would they want to be there if something tragic happened there?
I'm not
because
saying
it could
tragic.
Be their last memory. It could be the last thing that they did.
Maybe
so
they don't know
where
they're
do we
dead.
Go past there? Yeah. Maybe I'm just hanging out here because this is the last place I was.
Or fear of moving on to whatever it is. You don't know what you don't know. One of the people on our team had talked about that she has worked with spirits to move on to the white light. And it's like, how do you embrace that topic with a spirit? I don't know.
It's too many questions.
You didn't say there was going to be a test.
Even humans don't want to go there in some capacity. You can tell somebody
I know, but
that
once
the
I'm
sky
dead
is
and
blue,
some tragedy,
and they're going to
okay,
argue
let's bring
with
on the
you.
White light now.
Well,
don't you think?
Or move on.
Prisons,
but they're not,
prisons are a prime example. They're notoriously haunted.
Same thing with hospitals.
But look at the energy that's in there. Look at the bad things that happen in a prison.
So you would assume that they're... I would assume... That means they're trapped there, that they're stuck there, that they can't get out. Because if I was in prison and I died in some awful thing, I'd want to go back to a happier time in my life. I wouldn't sit around the prison.
But
so you're saying it's punishment?
I don't
it
know.
Could be.
But maybe they choose to stay. We don't know.
Or they don't know
choose,
how.
Though?
But we don't know.
Why
That's
do they
just
not
it. And anybody
know
who
how?
Tells you they do know is...
Why do
you
people
know?
Stay in abusive relationships?
Because
don't
we're
know
humans
how.
That don't know how. But if you're going to tell me now I'm a spirit, I would assume there's a little bit of freedom
well,
involved.
What
in
changes you from a spirit form to a human
I'm going
human
to Hawaii.
Form? I mean, yes. Take a nice vacation.
Go right. haunt somebody that's got some money in the
I've always wanted to visit
I heard Tahiti's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, let's go.
The Galapagos. I mean, there's no explanation for that. I mean, that's part of it. What makes it different from being human to being in spirit form or energy form? Is there a difference? That's the question.
Maybe they choose to stay. We don't
right.
know.
It's a choice. It could be, I mean, if we knew that, we'd be beyond millionaires. And that's why we also do this. It's to try and figure
Maybe.
These things out.
Is it the goal to truly figure it out that people like me would go, wow, this is real. I see it now.
Exactly. Because when
well,
you get physical
yet.
Evidence behind it.
Get the physical evidence.
There is.
No, there sort got, of is.
We'll
it's
find
shadow,
out when we
best,
all
it's
pass.
Best, it's
right.
best, it's
and
best.
And that's when Matt's going on his investigation September 28th.
And he's going to choose to stay in prison.
Exactly.
Right.
God, I would not choose. I don't see anybody making that choice. All right, guys, find out more information. Where can people find out more information? What are the websites they should visit? USParanormalResearch.com. USParanormalResearch.com.
True.
And that will give you more information about the Spirit Tour in Whitewater, Wisconsin, October 11th and 12th. And Scott, if people want to know about the Crown Point lockdown that's taking place September 28th at the Old County Jail.
Yes, that is thriller.events.com.
Thriller.events.com.
Mm-hmm. And then I also post a lot on the Chicago Paranormal League, which is on Facebook. So yeah, you can always request
we're on Facebook as well. You can find our stuff there,
and
too.
Look for the Chicago Paranormal League, yep, and look for U.S. Paranormal Research. Guys, it's always fun. Thank you so much for
it's
coming.
It's been a pleasure.
In.
Absolutely. And we've I look forward to seeing you the 28th.
We've got the stories that matter coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in just a couple minutes here on 720 WGN.
I hear something. There we go.
Hey, we made it till 4.
Yeah? We're in the final stretch.
The home stretch, people.
Wait, was that a ghost in the works?
Oh, God, here we go. Well, you know, the computer didn't work right there, and I think, you know, somebody telling us something.
I'm just telling you.
What's your whole take? Have I ever asked you, what's your take on that stuff?
I think it did a long time ago, even though I did see that shadow that night. But I don't. I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in spirits. I don't believe in any of that stuff.
I don't either yet. I'm still hesitant to go on this thing with him on September 28th.
I mean,
because I think it's going to freak me out.
All right, so look. So ages ago, and I'm talking ages ago.
Yeah.
I did a Ouija board.
I've never done that.
And it was kind of cool. And I asked questions about my brother. Now, my brother's been gone since 67. And started asking, I forgot who I was doing it with. Maybe it was in college. Maybe it was in high school. And I don't know. And it wasn't my board. So, you know, I'm not discounting the possibility that whoever's board it was, they must have had their hands on that little triangle thing and maybe was moving stuff. But I would ask the questions, and it moved. And it moved to yes or no. Whenever I would ask a question, that's the last time I did it. I wouldn't mind doing it again, but I wouldn't believe anything.
But it moves with people's hands on it.
Right. You have to very lightly touch it, very lightly have your hands on it, your fingertips.
So the assumption is the hands are moving in some way, right?
But if you feel someone pulling it, one would think that you would pull back on it. But I didn't feel anyone pulling it. I was, you know, staying aware of that. I think you can tell if someone's pulling something. Because why would you let it?
I don't know.
It felt like it was floating.
Because you feel like you're not supposed to be putting pressure on it, so you're just keeping your hand on it. So you wouldn't have.
But you would feel something. You would feel maybe it would press down, because like little felt pieces underneath each of the, I think there's three legs on that, mm-hmm, and there's little felt pieces, so it slides. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows? But I still don't believe in any of it.
Yeah. So, so I had an experience. I sort of believe, but I don't believe.
No, I mean, I took it with a grain of salt.
Did you feel like when you were asking those questions, like you felt your brother's presence?
No. 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 I don't think I feel any presence, but that said, I do have very detailed dreams of situations that will come true.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Very detailed dreams.
Like you're predicting the future?
Not predicting, seeing the future, but not knowing when that future will happen.
So you've dreamed things that then have happened.
Mm-hmm. It could be something that happens within weeks, months, or years.
Well, we're going to get that same texture that said, hey, how about if they give us a little financial information? Why don't you start dreaming about the lottery?
No, it's not something like that. It's like I'm in a specific situation, like a place, at an angle, at a certain day, doing a certain thing. Not winning the lottery.
So it's sort of more like a deja vu.
Kind of like, but
ahead of time.
Yeah, whatever that's called. But yeah, it's happened several times. It's happened watching TV. A very specific scene from a very specific program comes on, and the room has a certain shade of light, and I'm sitting in a specific spot, and it sends shivers through me because, boom, there it is. Another time happened when I was filling my car up with gas, looking at a sunset. Mm-hmm. I've been there. I saw that already. Though something did happen the other night that has never happened. I did have a dream about a week ago. I was in a I was having a very deep dream, very fairly detailed, but not a deja vu kind of thing. I get a feeling for those.
Okay.
And suddenly my mother appeared out of nowhere.
Hmm.
Like turned the corner of the house or something, and hi, how you doing? It's like I've never seen her in a dream before. Never.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mark says you're talking about premonitions.
Is that what it is? Premonition. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Okay, let's jump to this. I do want to talk about, we haven't talked about President Trump in a long time on this show, so all you people are going to get mad that you're, just relax. Let's just talk about something that's very interesting. This whole Sharpie thing is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I said earlier in the show, I don't understand. I understand that President Trump is, let's say, a complicated man. And he doesn't like to ever admit losing or fault or being wrong or anything like that. He sees that as a sign of weakness.
Right. Again. And again, preface it with saying that this is part of his personality mm-hmm. that people have written about and talked about for decades.
Yeah.
He's like
he's
that.
He's talked
just,
about it.
He, yeah.
Back in the day when he did books and stuff, he said, if somebody attacks me, I come out attacking harder. If somebody mm-hmm. tells me this, I come out in the attack. And he believes that it is a sign of weakness if you admit fault or admit wrongdoing and not just fight back, fight back. I mean, listen, when Kavanaugh came out all fire and brimstone and people were kind of stunned, and I remember thinking at the time, and much was written about it, he is doing this for an audience of one. It was that Trump doesn't pull the nomination. If I seem weak, if I seem contrite, if I seem that way, I think he felt, and I agree, that Trump was more likely to pull the nomination because going into those hearings, it seemed a little bit like this could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out all screaming and yelling and all red-faced, and
yeah.
I thought, boy, that is for the president. He is doing that. So CNN did a kind of like a, just a timeline of where this all went.
A timeline of the Sharpie thing?
Timeline of, you know, the whole Dorian Alabama thing. Over 5 days, President Trump delivered a barrage of inaccurate and confusing statements about Dorian, aggressively defending his original false statement by being repeatedly dishonest about what it was he had originally said. So Sunday, September 1st, so last Sunday, starts the controversy with a line, I believe it was in a tweet, in addition to Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama will most likely be hit much harder than anticipated. This is his. He claims that Alabama, among other states, is now likely to be hit worse than earlier forecasts had suggested. But the exact opposite was true at that point. There was a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration forecast from 2 days earlier that had found a tiny portion of southeastern Alabama might be affected by Dorian. The cone of uncertainty had extended a few miles into that state. But as of Sunday, September 1st, current NOAA forecasts at the time of the tweet showed the storm not impacting the state at all since it was moving north instead of west. So he says that he tweets that at 10:51 a.m. At 11:11 a.m., the Birmingham, Alabama Twitter account for NOAA's National Weather Service tweets that Alabama will not be affected by the storm. Quote, Alabama will not, N-O-T capitalized, see any impacts from hashtag Dorian. We repeat, no impacts from Hurricane Dorian will be felt across Alabama. The system will remain too far east. Now, the thinking is, when they did that, my thought was, well, this sounds aggressive, but the point is, if the president is saying Alabama's going to be hit much harder than expected, and people are seeing that, then people in Alabama might go, oh, crap. We got to get bread. We got to get water. Do we need to move? Do we need to evacuate? Do we need to, you know, bar up window? Like, what do we need to do?
Right.
So the National Weather Service is like, wait a minute, that's not true. Let's make sure that people in Alabama know. Hey. There's going to be no effects in Alabama. It's going north. We're fine. Don't worry about it, because you don't want to
cause alarm where none is due.
People to be rushing out doing things that, you know, could cause problems. So it made sense. 3 minutes later, Trump speaks to reporters outside the White House. He again alludes to supposed new information about how Alabama is going to be affected by the storm. Again, there's no such information from NOAA. Quote, the original course was dead into Florida. Now it seems to be going up toward South Carolina, toward North Carolina. Georgia is going to be hit. Alabama is going to get a piece of it, it looks like. Now, I don't know if he's just not doing well with geography at this point, that he not only says It was originally dead into Florida. Now it's going to be going up to North Carolina, South Carolina, North Carolina. But then he brings in Georgia and Alabama. It's like, dude, these don't all make sense.
Yeah. Because it had already turned.
Not a dead hit on Florida anymore, then it's not hitting those states. If it's going up, then it's going away from those guys. So it was a confusing statement at best. Same day, an hour and 15 minutes later, Trump speaks at a briefing at Federal Emergency Management Agency headquarters. He again refers to supposed new information that, quote, just came up, unfortunately, about a possible impact on Alabama. Quote, and I will say the states, and it may get a little piece of a great place. It's called Alabama. And Alabama could even be in for at least some very strong winds, and something more than that it could be. This just came up, unfortunately. It's the size of the storm that we're talking about. So for Alabama, just please be careful also. He says. And again, at that point, there's no current NOAA forecast that Alabama's to be impacted. And the Alabama National Weather Service had said no effects. But he's out here now. Keeps repeating it, says, hey, Alabama, Alabama. Almost like they said, what? No, I said yes. And so he's just going to keep driving it home. The next day, Monday, September 2nd, 7:16 p.m., Trump tweets criticism of ABC News chief White House correspondent Jonathan Karl for his reporting on the saga. Trump argues that he was correct in his Sunday remarks because, quote, certain original scenarios, unquote, had suggested Alabama could be affected. But that claim is plainly contradicted by all three of his Sunday comments in which he suggested he was referring to new information. I mean, that was a quote I just read. Quote, just came up, unfortunately. And I will say the states, and I may get a little piece of a great place. It's called Alabama. And Alabama could even be in for at least some very strong winds and something more than that. It could be. This just came up. Unfortunately, it's the size of the storm that we're talking about. So for Alabama, just please be careful also. He's saying that's new information. Now he's mad at this guy because he said, hey, certain original scenarios had suggested it. Wednesday, September 4th, 2:38 p.m., appearing in the Oval Office, Trump displays a NOAA forecast from the morning of August 29th, which has been altered with a crudely drawn black line that takes the hurricane forecast into Alabama. The unaltered version of that map did not have the black line and did not suggest any storm impact on Alabama. And that's the just amazing and great thing about that is this circle. God, if you haven't seen the map, it's this beautiful experience, like, you know, well done, you know, professional looking graph with just this additional little black circle.
Yeah.
And, in Alabama, too. Trump says, quote, Alabama was in the original forecast, again ignoring that the state had not been in the forecast at the time he made his Sunday comments. And he says, quote, in all cases, Alabama was hit, if not lightly, in some cases pretty hard. Georgia, Alabama, it was a different route. They actually gave that a 95% chance probability. Now, of course, it is not clear who they are or what precisely is saying. They said a 95% chance. No one never gave the storm a 95% chance of hitting Alabama. Same day, that was 2:38 p.m., now it's 6:23 p.m., Trump tweets a map from the South Florida Water Management District, which shows lines extending into Alabama. The map is a so-called spaghetti model, containing projections from computer models that meteorologists incorporate in the creation of their forecasts. It's not a forecast itself. It is dated August 28th, 4 days before his Sunday comments. He says, quote, this was the originally projected path of the hurricane in its early stages. And as you can see, almost all models predicted it go through Florida, also hitting Georgia and Alabama. I accept the fake news apologies. But there's a bunch of problems here, of course. Again, the map is not a forecast. It is raw information used to make forecasts. And he was not talking about day-old forecasts when he made Sunday's comments. The map is from a local entity, not NOAA's National Hurricane Center. And the map itself says that the National Hurricane Center advisories supersede what the map shows. And it is not true that almost all models showed the storm. Let me make sure I'm going to the right page. Showed the storm. Early models showed the storm going through any part of Alabama. Trump has shown no evidence that any spaghetti model at the time of his comments showed any impact on Alabama. The next day, Thursday, September 5th, 10:16, Eric Trump, the president's son, tweets another map from days before his father's Sunday comments. This map from NOAA, and dated August 29th, is about tropical storm force winds. It shows that 3 days before the president's Sunday remarks, southeastern Alabama was given a 5 to 20% chance of experiencing tropical force winds over the next 5 days, while much of the state was given a 0% chance. Other states that at least one NOAA forecast gave at least a 5% chance of experiencing tropical storm force winds included New York, New Jersey, and Delaware, which the president has not mentioned at any point of his comments on Dorian. Again, Thursday, September 5th, Trump tweets again to criticize fake news and defend himself. This time he says he had been referring to certain models when he made his comments, and the one model through Florida, the great state of Alabama, would have been hit or grazed. And those, again, if he was saying that, he was saying new information, but anything that would have shown Alabama at all is at least 4 days old, had already been replaced and changed. Thursday, September 5th, 1:03 p.m., South Florida Water Management District sends a statement to CNN to explain that it produces hundreds of spaghetti plots per day. The plots are refreshed every 15 minutes to capture updates in the publicly sourced data used to produce the plots. Thursday, September 5th, 4:44 p.m., Trump tweets some more NOAA maps from August 29th and August 30th, 3 days and 2 days before his Sunday remarks. Just as I said, Alabama was originally projected to be hit. The fake news denies it, he says. These maps, however, show that no part of Alabama was forecast even days before Trump's Sunday remarks to have more than a 30% chance of getting tropical storm force winds. For most of the state, the chances were 0 to 20%. And again, this is not what he said Sunday. Those remarks, the ones covered by the media, were about alleged new information, not about original projections. Thursday, September 5th, 5:31 p.m., White House issues a statement from Trump's Homeland Security Advisor, Coast Guard Rear Admiral Peter Brown. Brown says Trump had made his Sunday comments after Brown gave the president a hurricane briefing that, quote, included the possibility of tropical storm force winds in southeastern Alabama. Brown adds that NOAA forecasts all the way through Monday, September 2nd, showed the possibility of such winds hitting part of Alabama. On Sunday and Monday, however, the forecast gave only a sliver of Alabama a mere 5 to 10% chance of experiencing tropical force winds. And I think it was just today, NOAA, an unnamed spokesperson for NOAA, made a statement about it. And then the National Weather Service, one of the heads of the National Weather Service, tweeted something about this disgusting, you know, don't believe that anybody from NWS had anything to do with, they said disgusting comments, backing up Trump instead of backing up the scientists that said, no, Alabama's not part of this. It's just amazing to watch him go on and on and on with this. Trot people out who got to say, no, we did this, we did this. And maybe this guy had, you know, originally said I gave you that briefing. I'm the one that said Alabama. Well, where was he 3 days ago? Why is it 4 days later instead of he's producing map after map and this and this and this? And it's like until something sticks. And now somebody's got to come out there and go, all right, I'm the one that told him. And you're kind of like, did you really? Because he's producing map after map that's saying this is where he got it from. Now it's you? It's just very interesting.
I don't know what to say about it. Every bit of speculation about why, how, who, all that, it's already been said and done. I think I can understand if he, given his personality, if he comes out based on what he thought he heard someone say and wanted to talk about what's going on and how he's keeping an eye on it, you know, he canceled a trip to Poland in order to stay home and watch the storm and make sure everything was okay, and to move federal resources to where they were needed. If he comes out after the fact because that's what he last remembered and then he says it, he can't, based on his personality, he can't come back and say I was wrong.
Yeah.
It's just not within his nature. Unfortunately, it appears as though he has continued to build on the image that he not only made a mistake, but he's trying to cover it up. He's trying to tell people, oh, I didn't make a mistake. You made the mistake. I didn't make the mistake.
Yeah.
It's part of his personality. Again, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before. This is something that has been part of his personality. People have known, as you mentioned, they wrote books on it. Since day one, since he went into business for himself, and this is how he deals with people. So it's unfortunate, especially
on something like this. I've seen the maps. It's hard for I think our listeners to, if they haven't been following this, to understand what 5% is, or a sliver of the southeast portion of Alabama. It's if you put your little finger over the spot that may have had some winds, we're not talking about the storm surge, we're not talking about the amount of rain, the winds from this storm, you could have covered it up and covered up too much.
Yeah,
with your little finger.
Yeah,
I mean, it was so remote of a chance, it shouldn't even have come up in a conversation.
True.
Originally,
that's
with his advisors.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It shouldn't even have come up. Well, you know, it's tracking here right now, but you know, Mr. President, we know that that these always seem to turn back out to the water, and it looks like it may pull out. We're keeping an eye on that, but right now we're worried about Florida. That's it. Don't say, hey, and unless he said, well, how come the circle goes over here to Alabama?
Yeah.
No. Mr. President, that we're not worried about that. The worst that could happen is they get some heavy winds. We're not worried about that.
Yeah.
Focus on Florida. So, again,
so it seems unlikely that somebody saying, oh, I was telling him that, would have been putting any emphasis on it really at all.
Right. Exactly. It was so
that
remote.
Doesn't seem...
You know, it's like our forecast 2 days later was supposed to be heavy rains and winds. And it got windy and we got some tree branches knocked down. But, I mean, to say that Chicago was going to get the brunt of the storm is just not looking at the reality of it. You know, did we get some remnants of it? I don't know. Maybe we just had a front come through our Chicago, not affected at all by the storm.
Right.
You know, so whoever was advising him, whoever was pointing it out, don't offhandedly say, oh, yeah, and might get some in Alabama.
Yeah, it seems unlikely. It seems unlikely.
Yeah.
All right, I've got an interesting story about Trump's love affair with Sharpies, believe it or not.
Oh, yes.
Actually,
okay.
About his history with the pen, the Sharpie.
Okay.
We'll get to that after we take a quick break and get the news next on 720 WGN. If you've been staying up all night with us, thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you're just getting up, good morning, everybody. It's Saturday morning, 4:36 in the morning here on 720 WGN. We're live at the Skyline Studio at 720 WGN. I'm Abu Bali here with you for another half hour. We'll say good morning to Orion Samuelson in just a little bit. He'll have the morning show coming up. We're talking in the last half hour about the whole Sharpiegate situation with the NOAA weather forecast and the National Weather Service, and President Trump what is it called when you just double down? I guess doubling down. He just doubled down on everything with that whole thing. Michael D'Antonio is the author of the book Never Enough, Donald Trump and the Pursuit of Success. It's a biography he did of him in 2015, I think, before or as he was ramping up the run for the presidency. He wrote a piece, an opinion piece, about Trump's love of the Sharpie pen. He writes, first made in 1964. I'm jumping in a little bit in here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He goes over the whole Sharpie Gate thing. We already did that. So I'll jump in here more in the middle. First made in 1964 when Trump was a senior at New York Military Academy, the Sharpie quickly became a favorite of celebrities and athletes who were asked to scrawl autographs on everything from baseballs to movie posters. Nothing communicated fame so immediately as a signature inked in a distinctive Sharpie scrawl. Johnny Carson, whom Trump idolized as a college student, was an early endorser. I first noted the president's penchant for the bold strokes made easy by this kind of magical marker when I examined documents that informed the Trump biography I published in 2015. Whether he was signing an ordinary letter or scrawling a snarky remark to send to a journalist, Trump invariably favored the impression made by this pen. When he wanted to add a special flourish, he used one that came with gold ink. Nothing says Trump more than a message written in big golden letters. Imitation being the sincerest form of flattery, those who served businessman Trump picked up the Sharpie habit. To do otherwise would mark an executive as a shrinking violet. At Trump Tower, most of the signatures on inner office envelopes were made with Sharpies. I noticed that his daughter Ivanka Trump wrote attaboy notes about her father's press clippings in black Sharpie. The blunt quality of a Sharpie fits Trump's personality. Its thick barrel and wide tip make it impossible to write with any delicacy. If you want to make your message clear, you are forced to write in big strokes. Similarly, the thick lines produced by a Sharpie provided a cover for the writer who wants to tease with an impossible-to-read signature, like Trump's sawtooth autograph. A Sharpie writer forces others to pay close attention. Trump's choice of pen is about his desire to make a permanent mark, but here the tool that the White House selected, it is unclear whether or not Trump himself made the alteration, we're talking about the map now, to make an impression seems to reveal more than Trump might have wanted. Like a grade schooler's attempt to turn a report card D into a B, the line added to the weather map only drew more attention to the reality the scrawl was intended to cover up. Ill-informed about the hurricane he was supposedly monitoring, our president offered not the truth, but a forgery. He thinks we're too stupid to recognize a Sharpie line added to a weather map, but we see it as clearly as we discern his juvenile character. Boom. Boom. Take that.
But did you see what they're selling now, the campaign?
Oh, my God. Are they selling Trump Sharpies now based on this?
With his autograph on it, on the cap. Seriously, all black. Black casing. Yeah, the campaign is selling them.
And the autograph's in black, too, so you can't even see it?
Well, no, it's like, I think it's in gold. Or what probably passes for gold. I don't know.
I love it. I just love the drama of it all.
And the world keeps turning.
It does do that.
Yeah.
Hold on. There was another story in here that I thought. So here's the interesting story that has some interesting context to it. Let me see where I placed that one. So did you see the story about the Scotland and the refueling?
Oh, with Vice President Pence?
No, this is different. Okay, so Vice
President
Pence.
Oh, this is the secret military plane.
Vice President Pence stayed an hour and 40 minutes away, caused all sorts of havoc over there by staying at Trump's resort instead of staying local.
Mm-hmm.
But this story from Political.
Right.
Air Force crew made an odd stop on a routine trip, a Trump Scottish resort. Now, the layover is part of a broader House inquiry into military spending at and around the Trump property. In early spring of this year, an Air National Guard crew made a routine trip from the U.S. to Kuwait to deliver supplies. What wasn't routine was where the crew stopped along the way, President Trump's Turnberry Resort, about 50 miles outside of Glasgow, Scotland. Since April, the House Oversight Committee has been investigating why the crew on the C-17 military transport plane made the unusual stay both en route to the Middle East and on the way back at the luxury waterside resort. According to several people familiar with the incident, but they have yet to receive any answers from the Pentagon. The inquiry is part of a broader previously unreported probe into the U.S. military expenditures at and around the Trump property in Scotland. According to a letter the panel sent to the Pentagon in June, the military spent $11 million on fuel at Prestwick Airport, the closest airport to Trump Turnberry, since October 2017, fuel that would be cheaper if purchased at a U.S. military base. The letter also cites a Guardian report that the airport provided cut-rate rooms and free rounds of golf at Turnberry for U.S. military members. Taken together, the incidents raise the possibility that the military has helped keep Trump's Turnberry Resort afloat. The property lost $4.5 million in 2017, but revenue went up $3 million in 2018. Quote, the Defense Department has not produced a single document in this investigation, said a senior Democratic aide on the oversight panel. The committee will be forced to consider alternative steps if the Pentagon does not begin complying voluntarily in the coming days. Pentagon, Air Force, White House did not immediately respond to requests for comment. On previous trips to the Middle East, the C-17 had landed at U.S. air bases such as Ramstein Air Base in Germany or Naval Station Rota in Spain to refuel, according to one person familiar with the trips. Occasionally, the plane stopped in the Azores and once in Sinola, Italy, both of which have U.S. military sites. But on this particular trip, the plane landed in Glasgow, a pit stop the five-man crew had never experienced in their dozens of trips to the Middle East. The location lacked a U.S. base and was dozens of miles away from the crew's overnight lodging at the Turnberry Resort. Had the crew needed to make a stop in the U.K., Lakenheath Air Base is situated nearby in England. The layover might have been cheaper, too. The military gets billed at a higher rate for fuel at commercial airports. One crew member was so struck by the choice of hotel, markedly different than the Marriott's and Hilton's the 176th Maintenance Squadron is used to, that he texted someone close to him and told him about the stay, sending a photo, and knowing that the crew's per diem allowance did not cover food and drink at the resort.
Hmm.
An official who was not aware of the specific allegations said that mid-level officers or senior enlisted airmen commonly responsible for identifying lodging for their personnel are notoriously frugal and try to stay where their government allowance covers the cost. Master sergeants are cheap, he said. Several weeks after being alerted to the curious overnight stop, the Oversight Committee wrote a letter to Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan asking for documents related to Defense Department expenditures at Trump Turnberry in the nearby Glasgow Prestwick Airport. The letter signed by House Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings and Representative James Raskin notes that U.S. military expenditures at the airport appear to have increased substantially since the election. Prestwick Airport has long been debt-ridden. The Scottish government bought it in 2013 for a pound, but it has continued to lose money in the years since. In June, the government announced its intent to sell the airport, which the panel's letter described as integral to the success of the Turnberry property, which is 30 miles away. Because of that, the lawmakers argued that the spending at the airport, in addition to the spending at the Trump property, raises concerns about conflicts of interest and possible violations of the Domestic Emoluments Clause of the Constitution, which prohibits the president from receiving any compensation from the federal government, etc., etc. So at first I was like, well, what's the big deal? It's more expensive at that airport. I don't understand how that affects and helps Trump. But now I do. If that airport is in danger of closing down and nobody flying to that airport means fewer people coming to the resort, which has already been losing money.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering why it's losing money. I'm sure it's a beautiful resort.
I'm sure it is.
Beautiful part of the country.
I think what he spent on it or what it cost, I think it's been losing money. And isn't that the one that was, I remember before he was president, I want to say there was an HBO documentary or part of maybe a Real Sports about Trump taking over this property that people did not want him to do, and they didn't want this thing, and then he was, you know, really ticking off all the neighbors around there. It was something about the way he took over that property really did not sit well with people, if I recall. And I don't know why it's losing money. Could be location, could be, you know, who knows what.
Right.
But they might have invested a lot of money in the property, so it needs to make a lot of money. Maybe it's something like that, but not working out as well as you'd hoped, but suddenly C-17's refueling at a public airport when we have bases and staying at his luxury resort.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting conundrum.
But at the luxury resort, didn't you say that they don't cover food and drink?
The per diem didn't cover what they needed.
Because it's not on a base, right?
Well, because they're used to staying at cheaper places like Marriott
right.
and things like that.
I got
it's at some luxury resort where, you know, you go to the Trump Hotel here and try to buy a drink or a muffin. It's expensive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
From what I've heard. Mm. I've never been. Can't afford it.
Can't either.
One night we should order, maybe we could order pizza from, next time Papanino's doesn't answer, we'll call Trump Tower, see if we can order a pizza.
I wonder if they got a pizzeria in there.
$530.
Is that what, really?
Oh, I have no idea.
I can't
imagine.
I'm sorry. I can't. The money I won at bowling last week was a fluke. And it wouldn't cover it, even if I did win again.
You know, I saw something really cool. This is jumping, you know, completely off now. Ben Bradley over at WGN TV News. Mm-hmm. He did a story this week. I'm guessing he did a story. I just saw his Twitter accounts of this, where American Airlines was retiring a bunch of MD-80s.
Right.
The MD-80 was the plane that had the two engines on the back. They were very loud. I know there are a lot of noise complaints about them at O'Hare. They've been phased out. And American was retiring like 20 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ben got to travel with as they did this.
Oh, right, with the last one, out to the
Roswell,
desert.
New Mexico.
Right.
In this, you know, plane graveyard. And what they had there, and he had a picture of, we talked about this, I forget how long ago, you and I, we had somebody on the show about some Elvis memorabilia for auction. One thing was his old plane. And his
plane,
the plane was one of the things that Ben saw.
At this graveyard.
At the graveyard, yeah.
Wow.
And there was a 747, looked like it was only, you know, I want to go out there. Is that open to the public?
I don't think so.
Why do you
I don't, well, you got to, like, drive past it. Well, probably do have to know somebody.
Can you go in there and, like, walk in the planes?
All right,
that would
I'm
be amazing.
Hold on again. Airplane. God, I got to answer
graveyard,
all your questions.
Roswell, New Mexico.
Graveyard.
I want to go walk inside a 747. I never got to fly in a 747.
You never did?
No. Oh. Did you?
I think I did. Long time ago. Roswell International Air Center, and it's Rolls Airline Maintenance International.
Airplane graveyard.
And it's roll. Located time of its what? Oh, originally known as Roswell Army International Airfield during World War II and Walker Air Force Base in later years. Closed as an Air Force base in 67, largest air base of the SAC, Strategic Air Command, 4,600 acres. A lot of military aircraft. Oh, this is the MDA. So there's a press release related to the Roswell. This is called AirplaneBoneyards.com. American Airlines retiring the last of its McDonnell Douglas fleet today. This was on the 4th. 26 aircraft take their final flights to Roswell, New Mexico. Scheduled to depart. The last one was from Dallas-Fort Worth, bound for O'Hare. From there, the plane will ferry to Roswell. So that's why he was doing it. Two runways there. Various industries located there, companies which store, refurbish, and dismantle airliners, features ample areas for storage and reclamation, dry climate, relative humidity 4 to 8% is perfect for the storage. I've got several companies are there. Up to 300 jetliners may be stored or being reworked at Roswell at any given time. Roswell Air Center offers air service to both Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport and Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport via American Airlines. Oh, I guess so. Rental car services available, as are area hotels. The Walker Aviation Museum is also located on. Yes, you can tour it.
Are you sure? Because I'm reading that you can't.
Touring the Roswell International Air Center area, located 5 miles south of Central Business District. For driving directions, see the interactive map at the bottom of this page. And there are a lot of diagrams. You want to buy an airplane?
It'd be cool to buy an airplane.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what I'd do with it.
I don't either. Oh, that's. Do they leave the doors open on these things? Or am I just seeing one? Yes, they leave the doors open on the planes while they're sitting there. That is so weird.
At any given time, up to 300 jetliners may be stored or being reworked at Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the mayor of Roswell is in a video about this, apparently. I'm not going to play it. And there are locations of active and post-World War II airplane boneyards and plane storage facilities in the U.S., post-World War II boneyards in the U.S., there's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of them. Active boneyard and storage facilities, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 of those. So there's a lot of places where they're storing all these planes all over the place.
It's an actual working airport, too.
Yeah. I mean, from what I'm reading here, it's not like they're not saying you can't visit. It says, for driving directions to the airport, see the map. It's located 5 miles south, touring the Roswell International Air Center area.
But can you walk around and walk in a plane?
I don't know. There's a museum on site?
Yeah, but I want to walk in a plane. Well, I want to just walk around out there. I think.
Well, that's what I'm... Maybe you can. I don't know.
What do you think you got to know? I mean, they do little news stories there.
So get your press pass. You know who you got to know?
Orion.
You bet your sweet Bippy. I'll bet you he can get you in.
You think so?
I think so.
All right, let's ask him. In fact, we'll talk to him here in just a few minutes. Let's do that. And then after that, we'll have the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom with our friend Roger Battish here on 720 WGN.